how I approach policy is what's our goal and how can we actually ensure that we get there as quickly as possible.
Don't care.
Moving on, Mallory.
Moving on. Moving on. Can I tag team my buddy? Right, oh, yeah. My God. Just nothing? Why even
her
do this?
Her answers are very good.
They should just do like an email back and forth. Like, here's a list of questions. Can you just like answer them or like do like pre-record a video for us? Like, what's the point of pretending this is an interview?
She initially defended that policy by saying it's what keeps people safe. But I don't know. Does it? I think it keeps one group of people safe.
Why? I can't watch this. They're reading a script. You see they're reading a script, right?
Yeah.
Look at their eye. They're just reading a script. They don't even give a fuck about this issue.
To a group of people. And to me, like, anyone's feelings about that word, I think, are not as important as, like, recognizing what is still happening to people right now, which is a genocide under international law, you know?
How does your family feel about it? How are those conversations going?
Well, you know, it
depends on the family.
Depends on the family member, and it's tense. But ultimately,
you can't even answer a fucking question. What a fucking! It's so performative. They're such a performative fucking loser. I wish these people would just be honest. They don't give a fuck about anything, and they're just demons. These are Satan spawned people. What a giggly, happy go lucky fucking response for the largest fucking virtue signalers on the fucking internet. Just so you know, if this laugh right here was by McMorrow, the Majority Report would be playing this laugh nonstop. Look at how disgusting it was when we asked how their conversations went interpersonally, and they fucking laughed when we asked that question. Oh my fucking God. I asked Mallory McMorrow about her support for Israel. Oh my God.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
Why
Israel?
Do you support funding to Israel's defense infrastructure?
Because I don't think anybody should live in fear of being bombed or killed.
Queen?
I would look at how do we support defensive systems for Palestinians? How would we support defensive systems for Lebanese?
Should they get an Iron Dome too, the Palestinians?
Well, let's talk about that. It's a conversation.
Well, I mean... Hello. For anyone who hasn't been following recent left-wing political Twitter drama, or who doesn't keep up with the iconic drag queen Lady Bunny, who posted about
said drama on Instagram. Oh, did you notice,
though,
the fucking manifesto or whatever came out from the DSA? Or sorry, not the DSA, the Democratic Party? And nobody gives a fuck. Nobody's talking about it anymore.
You mean the...
The audit.
Autopsy?
Yeah. Where's all the coverage?
Well, because people wanted, apparently it sucks shit, but people wanted it to be about Israel-Palestine. That's the only thing people care about. Well, that's all they wanted.
Good.
Graham, this has been a long time coming. Allow me to explain. After I interviewed Dr. Abdul El-Sayed, a progressive candidate running for U.S. Senate in the state of Michigan, his Democratic primary opponent, Mallory McMorrow, reached out to me saying that she would like
Holy shit, A-plus reference. Why is the streamer cosplaying as Hiato Yui?
I don't get it.
You wouldn't because you're too young. You don't get it, Moot.
I'm getting old, man. I'm 29 now.
You clearly didn't watch Gundam Wing. It's the tank top or the wife beater.
To be interviewed. I was honestly a little surprised by this, given that Mallory and I have some key policy disagreements. In her race, Mallory is running on the standard Democratic liberal Zionist position of, you know, two-state solution, fund the Iron Dome, but Netanyahu bad, but also no sanctions about it, etc. She's also not running on Medicare for All. But I wanted to do the interview so I could ask her about those positions. Her team and I set a date and a time for the interview, and after I submitted a topic list, which included healthcare and foreign policy, they canceled and offered no time to reschedule.
Ooh.
I will say, and I don't want to assume intention, and I'm willing to be wrong, but I do kind of wonder sometimes if because of how I present and the fact that I'm so open about who I am.
Oh my God.
Hmm?
What? They just implied, I'm guessing, I don't even know, fuck me. Is this like a non-binary or trans person or whatever?
I got no idea.
Well, they said, because this is where they're going with this, if because of the way that I present and who I am, they didn't want to do that. That's what it sounds like. Or maybe I assumed, hold on, like, maybe I was an asshole, maybe I just assumed, hold on. They're gay. Okay, whatever.
I will say, and I don't want to assume intention, and I'm willing to be wrong, but I do kind of wonder sometimes if because of how I present and the fact that I'm so open about who I am, that people just think I'm like the gay guy, you know, who will talk about gay things.
I also really like how he goes, I'm open to being wrong. What does that mean? Like the email, oh no, I'm not homophobic, by the way. Like, wait, dude, get me the fuck out of here. Oh, the most cancerous thing in the universe is this disingenuous mixing of identity politics and of identity politics and socialism, where they can take off one hat and put on the other whenever the fuck they want. It's so fucking cringe.
And not much else. And not to be too like Sex in the City about it, but I can't help but wonder if they reached out to me thinking I'd just asked Mallory about like her LGBT record, you know? But in any case, I tweeted that I was disappointed that her team had canceled, and the tweet quickly got traction, and within a couple hours, her team reached out, and her schedule had opened back up, and we were back on. So, I don't know. Maybe an honest scheduling error, maybe not. Make of it what you will. I had my good friend and host of The Majority Report, Emma Vigeland, join me for this interview. Love her so much. And without further ado, State Senator Mallory McMorrow, welcome to A Bit Fruity.
Thank you so much. I'm so excited. I've been following you for years, by the way. So this is very exciting for me.
Oh, that, wow, that means so much to me. Seriously, though, I know we had like all of this like scheduling drama. And, you know, I know in the wake of all of that, you could have very easily just been like, I'm not going to do this one. And it would have made sense to me. So it really...
Imagine talking all that shit after actually getting the interview. Like, what the fuck?
Does mean a lot to me that you're here today. And I also know that like a lot of Michigan voters listen to this podcast, might see this, and I think they're probably really grateful that you're here.
Absolutely. And thank you for rolling with us. I mean, balancing, you know, running a statewide campaign, I'm the state Senate majority whip, so I've got that whole job, and I have a five-year-old, so our schedule, my scheduler is everything. She manages to piece it all together, but I'm really grateful that you rolled with us to make it work.
Yeah, absolutely. So let's get into it. State Senator Mallory McMorrow, you are in this three-person primary race for the U.S. Senate representing Michigan. That's really captured the attention of the country. And I want you to help us characterize it a little bit for people who might be hearing about this race for the first time. You have these two opponents, right? On one hand, you have Haley
Stevens. Hey, don't laugh at me. Fuck you.
Super pro-Israel.
It's
sort of an extension.
It's Shrimple.
Oh, tomorrow I will.
You're lying.
Like Chuck Schumer's brand of the Democratic Party, I'd say. Pretty old.
It's coming. Ask Jader. He's supposed to be the one to make that.
Guard. Haley Stevens was notably booed at her own Michigan Democratic Party convention recently. I'll throw a video in there if I can find it.
Good job. Awesome.
What is this?
Holy shit.
Which was pretty amazing. And then on the other side, you have Dr. Abdul El Sayed, who we interviewed on the show a few weeks ago. Dr. El Sayed is a very progressive candidate.
Who had nobody said anything mean about him. The other person got booed like a motherfucker. This guy, glowing. We love him.
Wrote a book on Medicare for All, very pro-Palestine. And I think, and please feel free to dispute this characterization, that most people view you as like someone in the middle. So I was wondering if you could first...
Imagine being in the middle of a fucking genocide.
Just like define yourself in the context of this race.
For sure. So to put the race into perspective, Michigan has an open U.S. Senate seat. Gary Peters is not seeking re-election. We have Mike Rogers, in all likelihood, the nominee on the Republican side, who ran against Alyssa Slotkin in 2024, lost by only 19,000 votes. The Republicans and Trump view this as their best chance to block Democrats from having a path at taking the U.S. Senate. They're spending the Senate leadership PAC announced $45 million that they're going to be spending in Michigan, which is more than they will spend in Georgia, Maine, Iowa, Alaska, New Hampshire. So this is it. That's so crazy. It makes sense that this has sort of captured the attention of the country, and we have a fiercely competitive Democratic primary.
You do. I should add, so people know, sorry, don't mean to cut you off,
yeah.
But it's like, depending on what poll you look at, which are coming out like relentlessly, it's like neck and neck with the three of you.
Yeah, and I think that's a good thing, but your characterization is right. You know, what I firmly believe is that the Democratic Party needs a reckoning, mm-hmm. that the old guard establishment of the party has really let us down. Mm-hmm. The first question I was asked when I got in a year ago was, would you support Chuck Schumer for leader? And I said, no. Apparently, I was the first candidate in the country to say so. And what I know is that in Michigan, we have built a very different blueprint. So for me, I know that people want to put us into neat little lane boxes, and I just don't think that's how Michiganders think. We have people in our state who voted for both Rick Snyder, a Republican governor, and Gretchen Whitmer. We have people who voted for Bernie Sanders and Donald Trump. This is a state where you don't have to register by party, and people tend to vote for the person that they like. But of the field, I am the establishment outsider, but with a track record of actually getting real shit done. I'm the only candidate to have beaten a Republican incumbent to get into office. I took on an entrenched family legacy in my first campaign for state Senate, mm-hmm. and I swung a district 20 points in a single cycle and broke the Republican supermajority.
Will this person engage with a single thing she just said, or is he just
waiting
to get to Gaza? Woo! Mm-hmm.
I then helped leverage a viral speech that I gave back in 2022 after I was smeared as a groomer and a pedophile by a colleague of mine. Millions of dollars. Yeah. I supported a dozen other candidates and flipped the entire state Senate for the first time in 40 years.
Been there with the groomer and pedophile.
Oh, same here, actually.
Yeah, and can I tell you, like, all of your Instagram stories were truly so helpful for us. Like, you may not know this, but a lot of us in the state Senate, we've been following you for a while, kind of hitting back on a lot of the culture war bullshit.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate that. And really appreciate everyone who like stood their ground amidst what I think was hopefully like the height of the culture war bullshit. I'm of the belief that like so much has happened since, especially to like wreck Americans' lives economically, that even the most sort of ardent like anti-drag brunch people are now kind of like, I don't got time for that. Yeah.
Sorry. I don't know if I...
I'm kind of hitting back on a lot of the culture war.
What?
No, I just want to talk about drag story time right now.
Bullshit.
Or no, they don't want to talk about culture war stuff. They just want to talk about class stuff and hating America. That's all they want to talk about. Fuck gays, fuck blacks, fuck trans, fuck everything else. I just need to talk about how horrible America is as a country from a Marxist perspective, and about how we're going to have the revolution and fuck billionaires and the Epstein class and Israel-Palestine, 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 Israel-Palestine. That's what it's going to be.
Thank you so much.
Anytime you hear somebody on the left do this, we got to get off it poll, guys. We got to get off identity politics. It's because identity is super inconvenient for Marxist retards who can only analyze things through one fucking lens, which is hate America, unironically.
I really appreciate that. And really appreciate everyone who like stood their ground amidst what I think was hopefully like the height of the culture war bullshit. I'm of the belief that like so.
Also, none of that had anything to do with what she just said. If she...
Nope.
Fuck, I had to get you off. Okay.
Go off.
If you're interviewing a candidate, I don't know, she said some things that are interesting about, I'm half listening, but like, why not ask like, oh, well, you ran a campaign and you beat a Republican candidate. What is like a lesson you think that Democrats who are running primaries across the country right now could take from that? What was unique about that race? Or how about you said that you leveraged some viral moment? Well, the media is especially focused right now on social media. What do you think Democrats could learn? What do you think Ken Martin or the DNC is getting wrong about? Or what do you think that there are some Democratic politicians at AOC, what are they getting right about leveraging social media viral moments?
Majority? What did you pass? Sure. Like, a ton of questions.
Yeah, sure. Or you said that you were one of the first Democrats who didn't support Schumer. Oh, that's pretty controversial. Why don't you support Schumer? Like, there's a ton of stuff to mine there, but instead it's like this segue into it's going to be some fucking class bullshit, anti-billionaire bullshit, or Israel-Palestine bullshit. As soon as you're like,
I'm calling Jews.
So much has happened since, especially to like wreck Americans' lives economically, that even the most sort of ardent, like, anti-drag brunch people are now kind of like, I don't got time for that, you know?
I will never forget, there was a press conference Tudor Dixon tried to hold in the middle of the 22 cycle, and she had all these people, and, you know, it was under the guise of protecting girls in sports, and she made this radical claims about what was happening in the state. And there was this incredible local news broadcast that it talked about her press conference, and then the reporter pressed her, can you provide a single example of somebody being hurt in sports in Michigan? And she said no. And then they cut away to a protester who was like, I just need affordable housing. Like, I can't afford anywhere to live. And I think that's why, you know, the speech that I gave then blew up the way that it did, because I made a point of saying people who are different are not the reason your healthcare costs are too high. And we can't let people who are hateful people distract from the fact that they're not actually doing anything to help you.
Yeah. And I want to talk about some of those economic issues, namely healthcare. I know going into this, because we want to talk about foreign
policy. He doesn't want to talk about healthcare, by the way. Well, we'll see. Sorry.
Well, they want to talk about Medicare for All.
Yes. That's it. Nothing else. Medicare for All.
Mm-hmm.
Will you commit today that when you go to Congress, you will watch every single American die before agreeing to anything besides maximally endorsing Medicare for All? Well, I don't know. We'll see. I don't know. I'm just being mean.
Policy and healthcare, because especially, you know, if you're representing Michigan on the national stage, then, you know, these are things that people really care about. So, Senator McMorrow, with regard to healthcare, you support a single-payer option, which is different from something like Medicare for All.
Oh, the public option? The public option? Why don't you just say right now that you want to shove a dagger into the back of every single sick person in this country, you disgusting demon witch?
Or universal healthcare. I wanted to play a clip for you that's gotten some traction of you speaking about...
By the way, public option, it would be the most radical healthcare system America's ever had. Even the ACA was the most radical. Well, I don't know if I would say that over like Medicare or something, but like was a very radical step in a direction towards universalizing some minimum standards for, you know, healthcare for the United States, and did a lot of things to patch parts of our healthcare system. Public option would be an amazing addition to the U.S. healthcare system if you believe that covering more Americans at cheaper costs is an important thing.
About what you see as the risks of universal healthcare, and just ask you more about that.
Oh, but we're going to play a clip attacking her having issues with the most extreme healthcare plan suggested anywhere on the planet. Remember, Medicare for All, as proposed by these fucking losers, would be the most extreme healthcare plan anywhere in the world. It would be the furthest left, the most extreme. There is no European country, Asian country, no country on Mars or the moon that has zero copay, has no cost at point of service for any hospital procedures, also covers dental and vision. There is not a single fucking healthcare plan on the planet that is as extreme as...
You know, I looked into this as well. You thought, like, everyone's like points to Switzerland in these places, and you look at it, and it's like, no, they just make you pay for your health insurance. Like, you have to have it.
Yeah, literally. Either that, or there are some copays, or there are some cost per prescriptions. Bernie's suggested plan, I don't know if they've changed their Medicare for All. I don't even know if they talk about the plan anymore, because it's just a virtue signal like Israel-Palestine. But the healthcare plan that Bernie suggested would have been the most radical healthcare plan, more extreme than any other healthcare system on the entire planet. But they pretend
that it's just... Do you know how much it would have cost?
I don't know. I'm sure it'd be a lot.
Off top of the dome.
I mean, you could make shit work, and then based on what we do now. But it's so cringe that like the only acceptable answer is literally
the maximalist
thing, more maximalist than any other planet on the planet. It's so stupid.
Sure. Also, you're new to the pod and learning that I don't have a producer. So when I say like I'm going to throw something up on the screen, what I mean is I'm going to play the video from my phone into the microphone.
Oh, that's cool. So, okay, perfect.
You know, sorry, you're welcome.
Some people conflate Medicare for All with universal health care. But Medicare for All, when it's actually defined, is one singular government-run healthcare system that we are all on. Now, I want you to imagine what that would look like with Donald Trump and RFK Jr. at the head of it.
Emma, do you want to take this?
Yeah, sure. So,
oh my God, and they had to do the layup, the 2v1. Okay. Oh boy. Oh boy.
So State Senator McMorrow, it feels like the implication of your framing there is that government healthcare programs shouldn't be trusted because Trump and RFK Jr. are leading them. Are there other programs, specifically healthcare programs or social programs, you think should be cut because Trump and RFK Jr. are currently in charge of them?
Oh, does she know? Now I want to know. I can add this to my list of ambush interviews. Did she know that she was coming into the cage match? I wonder if she knew.
She might have just thought it was the Matt Bernstein person.
I don't know. Especially with one of the dumbest fucking people in media today. Emma, $50,000 a year grade school tuition Vigilant. That's not an exaggeration. Fuck me, dude, these people.
No, that's not at all what I intended. And, you know, why fundamentally and firmly believe that we need access to universal health care? We need to get there as quickly as possible. In the state Senate, I have led on efforts to codify the Affordable Care Act on the state level so you can't lose your health care with it.
She's not even listening. She doesn't give a fuck about anything you say. She's going to follow up another hit piece question. Well, I don't know. Maybe I'm wrong. We'll see. Maybe she will engage with something that McMorrow says here. Maybe.
Pre-existing condition. We repealed our 1931 abortion ban. We helped expand a program called RX Kids statewide, which is a cash grant program for new moms and babies. We've expanded access to doulas and to midwives. We've done so much because this is such a big issue. And what I know is that people can't afford to wait. The idea that we should hold out just for one solution, to me, is just not what I've experienced in governing. You know, the next U.S. senator would be one of 100 members, and the votes for a true single-payer system simply aren't there. Now, there have been multiple states who have implemented state-level public options, and in those states, not only have they vastly reduced the rate of uninsured to next to zero, they've also reduced the cost of private health insurance. That is something that, as we look to how do we get to universal health care as quickly as possible so people aren't going bankrupt, they are not denying themselves care. You know, I am somebody who graduated from college right into the recession in 2008 wanting to be a car designer. So I did not have health care. I couldn't stay on my parents' plan until 26. Having that real public option, anybody who wants to opt into Medicare regardless of age can, while also ensuring if you want to keep your plan through your union or through your employer that you can, I believe is the best way that we can get to universal health care as quickly as possible.
We can talk about, I think, the merits of the public option and versus Medicare for All, but the public option would still be run by Donald Trump and RFK Jr. or whoever ends up being the Republican if they take over. So additionally, the entire...
It wouldn't be as radical. So, okay, so zero engagement on anything. Nice. But it wouldn't be as radical because a public option is just that, a public option. If it gets too corrupted, you still have private insurance that you can opt to as an alternative. To be fair, I don't actually like McMorrow's answer that, like, I don't want to have the government in charge of this because if we have a really bad person in government, it'll be fucked. Because technically, Trump could fuck up anything no matter what at all. But, like, this is
that
still...
what she actually said in this interview?
She gave on stage, she was basically saying, imagine if we have Medicare for All and then Trump and RFK Jr. become president. That is pretty spooky. Because they could have fucked the public option, but like imagine RFK Jr., imagine they say we're not covering vaccines anymore. Well, this already happened. Like when I go to the last booster shot that I got, yum, yum, yum boosters, I want to say it cost me $260. I think that's because RFK, didn't they like not cover or not subsidize these anymore? Am I making this up? Does anybody know what I'm talking
sure
about?
They don't anymore.
Yeah, but I think they used to. But I think that they said that now, as long as you have to have like a fucking prescription, basically from a doctor saying you absolutely need this vaccine, and without it, it's like you have to get like you have to pay the maximal cost or whatever. I think it was like $250 or whatever, or $260 for a booster. I was like, bruh. So like, imagine them being in the control singularly of the entire healthcare system. So it's like kind of fair, but not like the best. I don't think it's like the best argument in the world, but it's not like the worst argument in the world. But yeah.
Republican Party is against Medicare for All and single payer. So it's almost an assertion that Democrats shouldn't pursue Medicare for All or even single payer because potentially Republicans could get back into power and control it. I mean, that is the implication of what you said.
I don't think that it is. I think that's a mischaracterization.
How would you characterize it then?
Queen?
You talk a lot on the trail, and you want to make some jokes, and you want to help people understand where you're coming from.
Uh-oh. she's taking the joke route. Uh-oh. Do you think she was somewhat joking? I don't know, actually. Well, now I would need to see the full speech if we're going to say it was a joke. Show me the speech.
This is an administration that has slashed access to mifepristone. This is an administration who intentionally withheld SNAP benefits, even though we had the funding to pay for it in Michigan. That's a million kids who are on SNAP right now. I don't think we should shy away from the incredible damage that this administration is inflicting on government programs here in the state. I'm on the Appropriations Committee in the State Senate. We are having to backfill state Medicaid because they've vastly slashed access to funding for us. The one big awful bill means that Michigan stands to lose 13 rural hospitals. We've already seen a birthing center close in the Upper Peninsula. Now women have to drive more than 50 miles to give birth. I don't believe that it's out of line to highlight, hopefully with some humor, we're allowed to laugh sometimes, some of the incredibly damaging things.
Can I just say
that's
a really good talking point I haven't heard any other Dems say?
What?
Maybe I haven't been listening. The one big awful bill.
Oh, well, it's probably because it's already passed and no one gives a fuck. But no, yeah, I know.
I just feel like Dems need more catchy fucking phrases, as stupid as it is.
Yeah, well, the reason why we have no catchy phrases is because we can't like get anything off the ground because it's one person will say it and nobody else in the lib media like picks up on it because we don't have the whole fucking the meeting rooms with the conservatives or the tankies who are like, all right, guys, this is what we're going to say today. Like these guys do.
And has done while we are also advocating for what we would do if we get back into power, what we're going to propose, and how we're going to get there. How do you build a coalition to actually implement a policy that restores healthcare for people as quickly as possible?
That was a decent answer. Not going to get you any of it. Hit her up with the next gotcha question. Let's go.
I think the rub there is just that the framing kind of undercuts the idea of universal programs because the bad party can take over at a certain point. And, you know, I want Democrats to be talking about how government can provide social services for people. I think that needs to be a core part of the brand proposition. And, you know, another part of your assertion was that Medicare for All is, I wrote the quote down, one singular government-run healthcare system that we're all on. Can you elaborate on that? Because Medicare for All is a replacement for private insurance with a single government payer, like Medicare is currently. It's not government-run healthcare.
Sure.
So technically true, depending on the phrasing. I don't know if Bernie specified this or not, because you still have private hospitals. Although at some point, I don't really know if this matters or if it would eventually change into all government hospitals. Because if you have one singular insurer, one singular payer, then that means that theoretically, and this is what I think they want to do, is you can price control every single aspect of the system, which I'm not sure, but I think that necessitates at some point that it's all just government ran, right? Like even the medical providers. I don't know 100%, and these people will never detail it because they don't care to actually talk about policy. These are all, remember, this whole Medicare for All is just a thing that rich, white, young people online like to throw at you as a wedge issue to attack Democrats. That's the only thing that...
So you don't think it's doable at all, feasible at all?
The way that they talk about it? Absolutely fucking not. Because what Mallory McMorrow is talking about here is absolutely true. You expand parts of the healthcare system, you make more people notice that like, hey, when I have this, it's actually way better than it was before. Remember... Like one of the things that Democrats, if they had any unified messaging whatsoever, when they want to talk about the ACA, they should just exclusively advertise it with Trump clips talking about how good it was that pre-existing conditions are covered and that he wants to solidify blah, 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 blah. Because he came in 2016 wanting to cut. That was the singular Republican issue. They wanted to replace the Affordable Care Act. That's all they wanted to do. And they couldn't do it. But then when Trump came in at the end, I think in 2020, talking about it, and then I think as he was coming in for his second term, I don't remember if it was coming for the second term or was it the end of his first term, they were like, well, actually, you know, protecting people from pre-existing condition coverage to make it so that they can't get barred from coverage because they have pre-existing conditions, this is actually really good. And, you know, this is actually part of Trump. I don't know if he called it Trump care. He started to try to take credit for it. But like, yeah.
That was Obama's big fucking thing.
Yeah, it was one of the big parts of it. Yeah. And they should harp on that more, but you can't because this you're just busy fighting these fucking losers all day. Ugh. Oh, repeal and replace. That was it.
Have insurance with a single government payer like Medicare is currently. It's not government run healthcare.
Sure, you're right.
I think it has to eventually become that. No.
And I have taken that feedback to heart. We campaign a lot. And I do talk about this differently now so that it doesn't come across as callous. And you're right. A single payer system, Medicare for All in the.
Oh, this was the where this came from.
Stand on Medicare for All.
Great question. I support unabashedly universal healthcare. Everybody should have access to healthcare. And I want to tell you why I said it that way. So first of all, I shared my own story that I graduated right into the recession. I did not have any health insurance. I couldn't even stay on my parents' plan until I was 26.
That's the thing that was added by the ACA. You used to get kicked off, I believe, at 21.
And for millennials and Gen Z especially.
Is she my age? Because I graduated right at the... start of the recession. 39. Based millennials. Hell yeah.
We do not have the job security that our parents had. In my first campaign, my opponent knocked me, sent out mailers saying, she hasn't had a job longer than 2 years. I was like, well, yeah, I'm a millennial. That's normal. That's just what we have to deal with. So the idea that for generations now who are going to change your job every couple of years, that your health insurance would be tied to your job is ludicrous.
True.
Also, by the way, it prevents small businesses from being able to compete with larger companies because offering comprehensive benefits and health insurance plans and childcare and paid leave is so prohibitively expensive that we have this situation where the larger companies get bigger and they can offer more and they can get the best talent, and small businesses, which make up 90% of Michigan's economy, can't. Now, I said it the way that I said it because some people conflate Medicare for All with universal health care. But Medicare for All, when it's actually defined, is one singular government-run healthcare system that we are all on. Now, I want you to imagine what that would look like with Donald Trump and RFK Jr. at the head of it. You have this man who just last week held a...
Okay, I understand the vibe a little bit more. Maybe not the best answer, but this is like a, I guess, a... It's not a town hall.
It's better
hall,
than it sounded like.
Sure. Well, this is definitely a lot more casual. I thought this was like a formal fucking campaign speech, but I got a little
conference
more.
Saying that anybody who has been circumcised probably has autism.
I mean,
because they probably took Tylenol.
Well, did they?
This is a man who decapitated a whale.
Problem?
And dropped a dead bear off in Central Park.
Problem?
Who works out. I don't know if you've seen this, and I know it's the pettiest thing to complain about RFK Jr. about. He works out in jeans.
That is really weird.
There has to be so much chafing. I don't trust that man to make medical decisions for my family.
Horrible misspeak, but...
So we have to get to a place where there is a real, legitimate public option. And if you want to opt into another private health insurance, that you should have the freedom to do that. That is where I stand, and we were two votes short when the Affordable Care Act passed of getting that done. Now, it's not just an option, it's essential.
What's your stand on Medicare?
Okay, I gotcha.
Legislation as it has been introduced, it sits in the Congress right now, is a single insurance plan that would by law eliminate private health insurance.
The public option is on that because Medicare for All is a replacement for private insurance with a single government payer, like Medicare is currently. It's not government-run healthcare.
Sure, you're right. And I have taken that.
Like, Medicare is current. That's not true. I'm sorry. I don't know what she just said when she said that's not true. When she said that, like Medicare, older people can still have private insurance. I'm not aware of older people being forbidden from having other medical insurance, number one. And number two, aren't the Medicare Plan B things, aren't those also administered by private companies? Like, didn't United Healthcare, don't they do Part B things for... Yeah, I think Medicare for All, or I'm sorry, I think Medicare can, parts of it can be managed by private companies. So no part of that is true. Not, but again, these people don't know anything about healthcare, anything, because this is just all fucking virtue.
That feedback to heart. We campaign a lot. And I do talk about this differently now so that it doesn't come across at...
B, C, and D are all supplemental and are private. Okay.
As callous. And you're right. A single payer system, Medicare for All, in the legislation as it has been introduced and sits in the Congress right now, is a single insurance plan that would by law eliminate private health insurance.
The public option, can you expand on how you would solve some of the same, say, enrollment issues that you see with Obamacare? A Medicare for All plan would promise no premiums or deductibles. It would create a single payer.
No premiums, no deductibles. And I believe also no copays. And I think they usually say no copay and nothing, free prescriptions as well. I think they usually say that as well. But like, I'm sorry, where the fuck is this money coming from for this? This is kind of a... Also, they hate the public option, which would be... And amazing.
Okay, but why do they hate it?
Because it's not...
Just accelerationism?
Why would you like the public option?
Because it gets us closer
retarded,
to
retarded, 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 retarded. They don't give a fuck about policy. They don't give a fuck about healthcare. They don't care about covering people. It's about a wedge issue, okay? It's about creating a wedge issue in the Democratic Party. A public option would be an amazing addition to the current United States medical system in terms of getting people who, for whatever reason, have fallen through the gaps, that don't have jobs, that can't get insurance some other way, and the healthcare exchanges are too expensive. They are pretty fucking expensive. A public option would be amazing.
So they just care about the fucking they just care about the name and getting it done.
Basically,
that's it.
Well, they don't want to get it done.
They don't care
Nobody
about
supports
the people
it. There's
who
no support.
Actually get fixed.
Even the American population does not support Medicare for All. Like, this is just like a wedge issue. This is the Israel-Palestine of healthcare debates.
okay. that you see with Obamacare, a Medicare for All plan would promise no premiums or deductibles. It would create a single payer, the largest amount of leverage to keep costs down. That is why people want to go big with Medicare for All. A public option is an improvement, of course, on the private marketplace and the Affordable Care Act, but that would still involve premiums and deductibles. Why not go all the way to Medicare for All?
Yeah, I hear you on the vision. I 100% do. And what I know after almost a decade as experience in a legislator is that you need to push as far as you possibly can while building the coalition of votes to actually get it across the line.
So, like, an interesting follow-up question if we were having a real back-and-forth interview, okay? If you want to know how to, like, get girls to fuck you or to make it so that dates, if, or if you're a girl, you want to get a guy to fuck you, it doesn't matter, okay, right? Is when the person says something, listen to the things that they're saying and then ask a question based on the response that they give, okay? Or if you want to be, like, a good interviewer, right? If they give you an answer to a question, then ask a question based on what they just said instead of just going down the list to the next stupid fucking thing. It triggers the fuck out of me. Well, maybe she will. Maybe this time she will. My bad.
And the support for a true single payer system.
So like a good follow, an interesting follow up question might be, oh, okay. Well, there are a lot of people that want Medicare for All, and they feel like the public option doesn't go far enough. Maybe you can talk about like, well, how would you message a public option to those people? How would you sell it to those people? Or if you think that a public option gets us on the road to Medicare for All, what is the time frame? Look at that. I guess I don't know. The real question would be, what can we do to get as many Americans as possible on board with a public option? Like immediately, because if you know these progressives and these socialists and these Marxist-Leninists and these spoiled fucking rich kids all the time, they always say all of America wants Medicare for All. All of America wants it. Then why the fuck don't we have it yet? If everybody wants it, is it really the billionaires? Are they that powerful? Because however much support exists for Medicare for All, there should be at least that much for a public option, and then more, right? So if Medicare for All is just not quite there yet, then do the public option, and then once you have that, the jump from where we are now to Medicare for All is going to be larger than the jump from a public option to Medicare for All. So why not push for the public option? But it's because they don't care. They don't care about the policy or sick people or anything else. It's all just fucking wedge issues to them.
Isn't there yet. It just isn't. So for me, what I know, I have constituents today who have canceled their ACA plans because they see their premiums have gone through the roof and they're just praying that they don't get sick and don't go to the hospital. Allowing for anybody who wants to opt into Medicare regardless of age helps us get on the path to universal health care. And I'm also somebody who fundamentally believes states are the laboratories of democracy. This is where we try things out. This is how our country was established.
There's only been
one state who's ever attempted a true single payer system, and it was Vermont. And they abandoned that 15 years ago when they couldn't figure out how to pay for it.
We didn't have AI back then.
They couldn't figure out the implementation.
Wait, even John Oliver acknowledged this would be the most radical healthcare plan in the world. Wait,
would
really?
Be covered, and they'd be covered.
Oh, 6 years ago.
But well, Bernie's plan is incredibly generous. It covers vision, dental, long-term care, and drugs. In fact, Medicare for All is a misleading title because Medicare requires some co-pays and out-of-pocket expenses.
Oh, true!
And Bernie will excitedly tell you his plan eliminates those.
Under the Medicare for All bill that I wrote, premiums are gone. Co-payments are gone. Deductibles are gone. All out-of-pocket expenses are gone.
He's right. Hospital bills are gone. Co-payments are gone. Cell phone payments, gone. Flat tires, gone. GEICO commercials, gone. All the things you hate in this world will be gone. And all that will remain is universally accessible healthcare and Laura Dern. Finally, life as it should be. Bernie's plan isn't just more generous than most current private insurance plans. It's more generous than the policy of any single-payer country on Earth. And there is a good case to be made.
Thank you. Good job. Okay, cool. If you don't believe me, listen to John Oliver.
Where we now have three states who are running public option systems within their states that have gotten us much closer to the goal of universal health care. So that's how I approach policy, is what's our goal and how can we actually ensure that we get there as quickly as possible?
Don't care.
Moving on, Mallory.
Moving on. Moving on. Can I tag team my buddy? Right, my God. Just nothing? Why even
her
do this?
Her answers are very good.
They should just do I don't know, like an email back and forth. Like, here's a list of questions. Can you just like answer them or like do like pre-record a video for us? Like, what's the point of pretending this is an interview?
Extremely close to my heart as a Jewish person. As
oh my God,
there it is,
bro.
Jew.
A tax-paying American as a human being is that of Palestine. I was actually just the other night at a UN commemoration of the anniversary of the Nakba in 1948.
Oh my God,
when Israel displaced more than 750,000 Palestinians who still don't have the right to return home. So when considering people who are running for federal office, people who could determine the future of the U.S. relationship to Israel and the effect that that will have on Palestinians, you know, Lebanese people and Iranians, I know this issue is one people who listen to this show, for one, care a lot about. And of course, you are also running in Michigan, which has a large Arab population, which, you know, that was very consequential in the 2024 election when many of them withheld their votes from Kamala Harris and as part of the uncommitted movement. So I want to make sure people have a really clear understanding of your position. Also, for context, your opponent on one side...
have a clear understanding of your position. By the way, your opponent, the fake doctor guy, he wants fucking every Jew back to Brooklyn. I shouldn't actually say that. I actually don't know what the El Sayed guy's position is on Israel-Palestine. I do know that on the website, his position on Ukraine seems pretty based. So maybe he does have a realistic position on Israel-Palestine. I actually don't know.
Abdul El Sayed, he opposes all funding to Israel. And your opponent on the other side, Haley Stevens, is endorsed by AIPAC. Enough said there. So I want... wanted to highlight your approach and ask you about it. On your website, you write, quote, the path to lasting peace between Israelis and Palestinians lies in a two-state solution with a democratic...
Oh, big mistake. Two-state is not acceptable anymore, remember.
Jewish state of Israel existing safely along a democratic Palestinian state.
Whoa! Kay from YouTube, it's so fucking insulting listening to Emma feign caring about costs while coasting off her $350,000 private elementary slash high school education and then her private lib arts college degree, probably all paid by daddy, obviously.
Two-state solution, with a democratic Jewish state of Israel existing safely along a democratic Palestinian state. You write that the flow of aid to Gaza, quote, needs to be restored, that Israel's expansion into the West Bank, quote, must stop.
Not even remotely close to good enough.
And that Hamas must, quote, disarm and demonstrate a commitment to a peaceful and democratic Palestinian state.
Oh, my God.
You also support funding for Israel's defensive weapons infrastructure, you know, things like the Iron Dome. Is that all correct?
Oh!
Increasingly, that's changed. Okay. And you even see Netanyahu now vocally saying that he himself wants to cut off relying on aid from other countries. So I would support Israel continuing to be able to purchase systems like the Iron Dome defensive systems. But I think it's in the best interest of the United States in reducing that aid and allowing Israel to do that on their own.
But I mean, as of now, though, your policy that you're running on, just so voters are like clear, is that you support sort of the defensive infrastructure. So we wanted to ask you a couple questions about your stance here. First, regarding what a two-state solution means to you and how that could affect your policymaking.
The two-state solution debate is something where I really do think that there are a lot of Democrats are kind of behind the reality on this issue. So I just want to talk in terms of practicalities. Where would you...
Remember, this is what I said, two-state, that's the Nazi, that's the neo-Nazi, Zionist Nazi option, Zion-Nazi option. You cannot be a two-stater. That is the they won't accept it. That's, you might as well ask for a fucking public option. Are you fucking crazy?
In terms of like your ideal two-state solution, draw the borders. Because as you know, Israel's been illegally occupying East Jerusalem and the West Bank since 1967 in violation of UN law. And since then, 700,000 Israeli settlers have moved into the Palestinian territories in East Jerusalem and the West Bank and have stolen Palestinian land. So my question about the practicality of a two-state solution is, how would that happen? Would your scenario require removing the 700,000 illegal settlers living on Palestinian land?
So Emma, what you're asking is, I don't believe the role of a U.S. senator. I believe...
Oh my God! Queen? Hello? Queen?
The quality of a two-state solution is, how would that happen? Would your scenario require removing the 700,000 illegal settlers living on Palestinian land?
So Emma, what you're asking is, I don't believe the role of...
I'm sorry.
...require removing the 700,000 illegal settlers living on Palestinian land.
But by the way, not even the Palestinian delegations of the past have made this request. This isn't even a thing that they have demanded because they don't actually care that much about the... Well, I shouldn't speak for all. I don't know what the fuck anybody wants these days. But generally, Green Line settlements don't really care that much about. East Jerusalem? They do care about. And some type of contiguous country, arguably they care about. Although now, if they can push for a one-state solution, who the fuck knows?
So, Emma, what you're asking is, I don't believe the role of a U.S. senator. I believe that a senator should have a role in allowing the United States...
Ooh, she's not happy with that one. She's like, excuse me, what? Remember, for our hostile interviews, right, we're asking for discrete facts, tough follow-up questions, push until the opposing party squirms or cannot answer, also ambushes with quotes or prior examples of the other party's police behavior. So we had the ambush clip earlier. Remember that one, right? Here's a clip of what you said about this. We've got... Generally, you would have tough follow-up questions, but both of these interviewers care so little about the average human being. They care so little about the average person on health insurance. They care so little about the average Palestinian that they can't really ask any meaningful follow-up questions. It reminds me a lot about with my deposition with Joan, where she couldn't really ask any follow-up questions about any of the technological stuff. So I guess we're not going to get that section of a hostile interview, but...
To facilitate, I believe that a senator should have a role in allowing the United States to facilitate the negotiation between the Palestinians and the Israelis that gets to a place where there's long-term peace, security, and self-determination for Palestinians and long-term peace, security, and self-determination for Israelis who all live in the region and have to figure out a way to coexist where they're not killing each other. I don't believe that it's the role of a legislator to determine where those borders are or how it coexists, but it should be our role to de-escalate the conflict. I do not support...
de-escalate?
Or the Netanyahu government. I think that they have continued to push
right
well beyond what is proportionate, what is rational in response to the October 7th attacks, in a way that is horrifying to watch. I mean, bombing Gaza to be completely uninhabitable. The settler violence that you see.
Not good enough.
That while it is
not
technically illegal, they are certainly.
Look at the dead face, the graven, sunken, unholy expression. She doesn't give a fuck about any of this. You bitch, you didn't answer the most pure question. 700,000 Jews need to get out. They need to get out of the West Bank. In fact, they need to get out of Israel completely.
Certainly doing nothing to stop it and continue to encourage it. And Matt, you brought this up particularly related to our state. We have a very large Lebanese population. 1 million people in Lebanon have been displaced. And I know a friend of mine who's running for state senate mentioned to me that his grandmother's home in Lebanon has been bombed 3 times. And that somehow she's still in good spirits about the fact that she is alive when many of her neighbors are not.
Don't
so
care.
For me, I'm somebody,
don't
you know, I bring a background in industrial design into how I pursue policy, which is starting with the outcome and then backing into how do you help facilitate making that happen. What I believe is that there is broad shared beliefs across our constituents in both the Jewish community, the Arab community, and frankly for—
Watch Emma's eyes. What is she doing? Oh, she has like a paste bin or whatever, or like a word pad of questions to ask from. This is why they can't ask follow-ups or whatever. But it's pretty clear that Mallory McMorrow prepared for this and knows how to answer the question well. I mean, this is a state senator running for federal, the U.S. Senate. So, I mean, she's not an idiot. But I don't know if Emma can actually meaningfully follow up with any question on any of these topics because she's just woefully ill-informed. She thinks that everybody from Africa looks like a black, dark person. Like, this is the level of foreign policy that we're on with this fucking idiot.
People who are not directly impacted by this, who are horrified beyond belief at the ongoing violence, suffering, chaos, who simply want the violence to stop and see the United States has played a role in continuing the violence when we need to play a role in ending it.
And I hear what you're saying about you don't want to draw specific boundaries. I understand that.
Don't
but
care.
I think it's important to dissect what a two-state solution would actually entail. Do you believe that that should involve some sort of reparations?
Sleepy Joe Biden, thank you for the 20 gifted tier one subs, buddy.
Reparations for Palestinian land that has been stolen, because increasingly, if you look at the map of the West Bank, it's being taken over by Israel. So there would have to be either a forcible removal or Palestinians would have to be crammed into even smaller and smaller territory.
I love how she says forcible. You mean an ethnic cleansing, right? Just say that. Use their terms, by the way. You want to ethnically cleanse Jews from the West Bank, which is based, by the way. And to some extent, it should happen. But at least use the right words, Emma. What do you mean forcibly remove? You guys like the term ethnic cleansing now, right?
Yeah, and again, I go back to the United States role, a legislator's role, should be in helping to facilitate between the negotiators and something that allows for that peace and security for Palestinians alongside Israelis. I don't believe that that is my role to dictate, to put on to the people who do live there what they should be fighting for their own lives.
I want to push back, though.
Oh, where did the... What was her response to that? These guys are literally tag-teaming her on this, and she's owning them, by the way. And by the way, fuck politics. That is a good answer, but... Americans are like tend to have no concern about what people actually want in Israel-Palestine. Now, if you know anything about what you're talking about, you can technically levy that same criticism back at me because nobody over there wants a two-state solution either, okay? But we need to force it on them because fuck them both. But when
so
these guys talk...
What do they
want? Well, they both want the other side to get fucked right now. I think that's where they're at. Yeah, that's where they're at right now, okay? Somebody needs to go over there and knock some sense into them. But yeah, this idea that like, oh, you know, there's this peace agreement that they can all agree on. No. You got to force them on some shit right now. But this, whatever they want is, Emma's side is just the eradication of Israel as a Jewish majority state and likely the ethnic cleansing of the mass, the majority of Jews. I hate that fucking term, ethnic cleansing. Basically making most of the Jews leave Israel.
Where are they going to go?
Back to Brooklyn, baby. Unironically, that's what they think.
Do we really want them, you know?
Oh,
think
shit.
About that. Yeah.
Wait a second.
Hold on now.
Has anybody ever brought that up? Well, if we... It's kind of like Israel is the logistical server.
Yeah, containment zone.
Do we want them all coming back to America?
That
you didn't like
what you ask them.
You didn't like AIPAC before. Now you really can't accuse them of being a foreign-funded thing because...
Now they're going to be pushing all their shit
true.
On you.
True. Oh, okay.
Live there, what they should be fighting for their own lives.
I want to push back, though, a little bit on... You know,
what could you even push back on there? On whether or not you think it's not your job as a senator? It's all of our jobs, lady. We're humans. I'm human. I'm Palestinian, actually.
That would be
your
awesome.
Your role as a senator, sort of, you're presenting it as like a little bit detached from the peace process there. Whereas like we know that Israel's sort of violent and ongoing expansion now.
detached from the peace process. I'm sorry, what were the past senators that were negotiating peace in Israel-Palestine? How about you give us some historical perspective here?
Went to Lebanon, as you mentioned. It's only possible because of ongoing bipartisan U.S. support. And
that's
so
not true,
I wonder
okay.
if you continue to support defensive weapons infrastructure to Israel, how you see yourself as utilizing any of the leverage you could have as a U.S. senator in this situation. And I guess how you think, because like this two-state solution line, right? It's the party line for a long, 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 long time.
Since the 90s.
And it just hasn't borne out.
Good contribution, Emma. Thanks.
I think probably everyone on all sides of this issue could agree with that. And so I wonder how you are breaking from the establishment in a way that would materially benefit the people who, frankly, like my tax dollars are killing.
Yeah, and I'm glad that you framed it that way, because I think there's a difference, Matt, in how you asked your question versus Emma. One is these.
What the? Who is the other person? Is this a Suzanne Collins race or whatever?
No, this is...
Or who's the... There's another moderate running against her, and then El Said, I think, right? Is it... is it Collins? No, I just said Collins. Who is the other one?
Collins. I don't remember her name. She's not going to
win. Oh, Haley Stevens. That might be the other one.
That's who it is, yeah.
Well, they might be a queen, too. I haven't seen them in interviews, but that person maybe needs to go, okay? Because McMorrow is a queen.
Specific framework of the borders.
I like how they...
Friends, Matt, and how you asked your question.
I like how they did a camera cut here just to show Emma being ass-pained. Good job.
And versus Emma. One is the specific framework of the borders of the nations. The other is what leverage does the Congress have to help facilitate this negotiation? I would have voted alongside the 40 out of 47 senators who voted in the past Sanders resolution blocking arms sales. And let's acknowledge how stunning it is that a year ago, that number was significantly smaller than it is today. My views on this have evolved because the reality on the ground has evolved. It has been horrifying to watch.
Nope, not good. Sorry, genocide on day one. You're wrong.
How Benjamin Netanyahu and the far-right government have prosecuted this ongoing war against Palestinians, against Lebanese, against Yemenis, in a way that the United States cannot support. Simply put, the Congress holds the power of the purse, holds the power of funding and resolutions, and that is where I would view my role in coming in is keeping an open door to everybody within our community. Michigan is a very diverse state where we have the largest Arab American population living side by side with a very significant Jewish population.
What is this comment? Destiny. Stevens is kind of a wacko. She's had breakdowns on the House floor and is ultra pro Israel. Also, because she's a woman and will be judged on it, her outfits are also not great. What does that mean?
And Matt, your question is the universal truth. I was in an Uber a couple of weeks ago, and the driver said almost exactly what you said, which is how can our country afford to continue bombing other countries when we can't pay for our own kids? That is where we need to step in and say enough is enough, and we need to bring this to an end.
Yeah,
I mean, you mentioned that how in Michigan you have people of different faiths, Muslim, Jewish people, Arab people living side by side.
Is there a single follow-up question to anything? I know there's not, but it's like it's such like an obvious hit piece interview. It's so stupid. Oh, my God.
That is where we need to step in and say enough is enough, and we need to bring this to an end.
Yeah,
I mean, you mentioned that how in Michigan you have people of different faiths, Muslim, Jewish people, Arab people living side by side. I think it's very American to believe in multiculturalism as an ethic, in that it engenders understanding, and when you can live alongside people who maybe have different views than you, it reduces the capacity for hatred. It's why we don't believe in things like segregation and apartheid. But Israel is an apartheid state. And, you know, when we're talking about who has the right to have land and to live in peace, I mean, we're recording this right now on the anniversary of the Nakba, and the Palestinians have been ethnically cleansed since, you know, you could say 1948, but prior to that, from the land that is now Israel. Do you not believe in multiculturalism as an ethic for Israel and Palestine?
I'm sorry. It's just the whitest, most American kid take. You guys have multiculturalism in the same way in America? We all get along with the multiculturalism, just like in Dearborn, Michigan? Kill me, fam. Oh my fucking God.
Wait, what happened? I missed it.
It's just the cringiest. It's just retarded questions.
Shared land would be, in my view, American and also...
Here's a question. Are there any other more and functions as well multicultural countries as Israel in the greater Middle East region? Who would you point to as a successful example of a multicultural state?
So the solution that we saw in South Africa
Qatar?
That could provide...
Isn't this a Nazi talking?
Multicultural, though.
Yeah. Isn't this a Nazi talking point unironically? Kind of. It's like an inverted version of it, where the Nazis believe that the Great Replacement and everything has been forced upon the West by Jews in order to weaken the white man. So we should force it. I don't know. I've never heard the inverse of it. We should force it on them. That is kind of base. But
be, in my view, American and also the solution that we saw in South Africa that could provide fairness for everybody involved.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
And it may very well be. You know, there are people who have... worked on this issue for far longer than I have. And I always try to check my own bias at the door. I can't possibly understand what it is like to live in the middle of the Middle East. I can't imagine what it is like to have my home stolen from me, to have my family killed.
At what point in this interview do you think McMorrow figured out this was a hit piece? I mean, I think she came in, she must have known it was going to be pretty rough because her answers to all these questions are pretty good, I think.
And
very good.
I,
she's a great speaker.
She's also doing some very, am I allowed to say, like, female-coded snarky attacks against Emma, which I do appreciate.
Oh, she did. Yeah, she did.
Yeah. Well, and then this here, like, you know, for me personally, just for me, I like to check my biases at the door. This is very funny. She's, I don't know if they're intentional or not, maybe. I think they are. But
what it is like to live in the middle of the Middle East. I can't imagine what it is like to have my home stolen from me, to have my family killed. And I want to leave the door open. I think it's important for anybody who holds.
Like, why do these people even have these interviews? She's, you can see her typing on the computer, by the way. She's probably trying to tee up her co-host, right? Like, her, the camera is shaking because she's typing on her little keyboard. Like, she's not even listening to any of the answers here.
She's like DMing him or whatever.
Yeah, she's not even smart enough to engage with the subject matter. Like,
well, no, because nobody's here to have a good faith conversation. Yeah, they're just here to get their cringe. Talking points out, blah blah blah.
I wonder if this is another DSA printed talking point hit list for these types of interviews. I wish Dems would stop doing, please stop doing these.
And I want to leave the door
open.
We
should watch the Abdul al-Sayed interview after and see
the difference. Oh my God.
Who holds the role of a senator as a legislator to check their own bias at the door, be open and objective. And if there is, and I've heard from both the Jewish community and the Arab community that you're right, Emma, a two-state solution has been something that has been attempted for a very long time. We have failed to accomplish that so far. Perhaps a multicultural solution where people are living side by side is a better solution, but I want that to come from the people who live there. It shouldn't be the role of me to assert my views on residents of another country.
Yeah,
yep, there it is.
I'll move on a little bit, but I think it's just...
I want to move on. I just think, oh
yeah,
my
I
God.
My next question.
Hold on. Excuse me, Mutin, shut the fuck up. We need to virtue signal first about how disgusting her lack of empathy is for the Palestinians.
You know, to me, it's like Israel, who is the occupying power in this dynamic, I mean, as recognized by international law, does not want a multicultural state. Obviously, that is, you know, when they say like, oh, you guys want to destroy Israel, what they're talking about is a destruction of the apartheid system. What they're talking about is bringing in equality. And so I guess
how many Arabs live in Israel again? She should ask them that. By the way, I bet neither of these two know.
I want to stay on for a second, like how you could use your leverage as a U.S. senator to stop this violence, which.
Oh, my God.
How many Arabs do live in Israel? Isn't it like.
There's the population of the Israeli country, ignoring the West Bank and the Gaza Strip, are 9 million people. 7 million are Jews. About 2 million are Palestinian Arabs.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it's a huge chunk. I'll be honest. I didn't know that at all before I went over to the country, which is kind of crazy. But I guess I haven't gotten to the modern part of my reading yet. But like, yeah, there are more Arabs living in Israel than there are Jews living in every single Muslim country combined times 10. Like, it's not even close.
We all agree has to stop, right? Like we mentioned, you draw a distinction between Israel's defensive and offensive weapons infrastructure and currently support funding for the defensive part of that, like the Iron Dome. I think a lot of people, though, might disagree with that distinction and say that Israel's defensive capabilities enable their offensive capabilities. Like,
this new talking point is just so fucking cringe. Like, well, if you give them money, because before it was like, we can't allow them to have offensive weapons. This is horrible. You know, fine, they have the Iron Dome, but we can't give them money to go bomb the people. It's like, well, hold on. If we give them the Iron Dome, well, now they can spend more money on offensive weapons. We need to get rid of funding for the Iron Dome. Like, pretty soon it's going to be funding for literally fucking everything that's even tangentially related to Israel. Like, no, sure, cut all funding to Israel, but not just that. Then we have to go after companies in the United States that are even trading with people in Israel or even connected in any size, shape, or form with the way to Israel. We have to boycott the boys because that one actor is a Israeli citizen. It's like, oh my God, bro, give me the fuck out of here.
Isn't Israel trying to get off of the U.S. dime
anyways? Yeah, they would be happy to hop off our military support shit and they can go on a fucking rampage. Maybe, I don't know, we'll see what they actually do with that. But.
And say that Israel's defensive capabilities enable their offensive capabilities. Like,
whoever printed this stupid fuck, God, I hate these people.
The Iron Dome allows Israel, one might say, to operate with impunity because they don't face the same threat of retaliation. So what would you say to that?
I hear you. As you can imagine, this is a conversation we have every single day in a state like ours, where we have vastly different viewpoints on the right course of action in the Middle East. And it is the job to go in with an open mind and to listen and to make the right, most objective decision that I possibly can. And as I said at the outset, it is...
Excuse me? Remember when Morpheus looks at Neo, when Neo's in the room, and Neo's like, I'm not fast enough. And Morpheus is like, do you think you being fast has anything to do with your muscles? Do you think that's air you're breathing? That's the attitude with the law, okay? Do you think those words mean anything? Do Do you think those words actually matter?
Trump just created a $1.8 billion slush fund to pay off January 6th insurrectionists using your tax dollars. No congressional approval, no oversight, just pure corruption. A slush fund created by a lawless president for his insurrectionist followers. Today, I introduced the New York Anti-Insurrectionist Act. This bill would create a 100% state income tax on any New Yorker who collects from this fund. It's simple. If you're...
King?
Yeah, let it happen.
Hello, King shit?
You're a New Yorker and you take from this illegal slush fund, New York State will tax 100% of it. If you storm the Capitol and you take from the slush fund, too bad. We're taking it. I'm Alex Boris, New York State legislator running for...
You know what I like about this, too, is this creates the patriotic incentive to hit up that slush fund if you feel like you've been illegally prosecuted and try to get money from it. And then you can give it to the wonderful state of New York.
Congress to take on Trump in D.C. Trump just created...
King shit.
Is increasingly the view of even Netanyahu himself that he wants to be able to do it on his own and doesn't want to rely on foreign aid. There seems to be a recognition that they are going at everything they possibly can and are losing the support of the world. They're losing the support of Americans. And I will always, my pledge is to always be objective. You know, I am not.
Bro, I'm so sorry. Hold on. Just a quick doobie meme. This guy would never survive a day in my life. These guys are so lucky they're not under a fucking spotlight. What the fuck are his answers? I think the question was, would you allow a pedophile to describe anal sex in the presence of a minor? And your answer was, it depends. That wasn't the question, shake my head. I think discussing sex around them is fine in some context. We're talking about primarily high school students right now. They've gone through sex ed. What the fuck?
Oh, so he's in the fight right now over that.
What? But like, bro, nobody's forcing you to... These are the craziest fucking positions in the universe. Why?
So tied to an individual viewpoint that I'm not willing to change my mind when the facts on the ground change.
I guess then to that end, why do you support funding to Israel's defense infrastructure?
Do you want Palestinians to die?
What is, I guess, sort of your positive vision in supporting that policy? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Because I don't think anybody should live in fear of being bombed or killed. I would look at how do we support defensive systems for Palestinians? How would we support defensive systems for Lebanese?
Should they get an Iron Dome?
Should they get an Iron Dome? Oh, she's so smart. Should they get an Iron Dome? Oh, she's like, I got her this one.
Home to the Palestinians?
Well, let's talk about that as a conversation.
Well, I mean...
Oh, deactivated immediately. Bye.
The horror of...
She didn't like that.
Oh, wait, what's wrong? You didn't like that answer? Excuse me? What? We can't engage here? These people can't engage with anything. It's so fucking pathetic.
Living in fear of being bombed constantly. Let's work with the outcome of how do we end the violence, period.
But I mean,
but then backing away from that, how do we protect people?
I think
that's, I'm sorry, but you've kind of strayed way too far from my talking point. So actually, let's go back to how Jews are the devil.
Then though, that sort of probes that like maybe we're coming from different worldviews here a little bit, because my worldview, and I think one that Emma has been talking about as well, is like multiculturalism, where we...
Here's a question. Are you going to force a Palestinian state to not discriminate against any ethnic minority and they have to 100% uphold all Western democratic virtues when it comes to giving people the representation to vote and all that? So if a million Christians tomorrow, if the new Palestinian state is made and 5 million people from the U.S. want to immigrate to Israel, they have to accept them all and they can't vet based on religion or ethnicity, right?
We live amongst each other.
Quick question.
And
how does Hamas feel about gay people?
Well, hold on. Where is... Excuse me. Hold on.
Yeah.
You think you're so fucking smart, bro. You think you're so smart, but there's actually a really good reason for this. Hold on.
Okay.
You don't even know why there's so much homophobia in the Middle East, do you?
No. I'm excited to learn.
There's a video of this, goddammit. The go be gay in the Middle East shit is extra wild. Yeah, man, a lot of these countries are awful in gay rights. They haven't had a fucking moment where the gays can go out and protest because the American-backed fundamentalists that were the best at killing the popular, secular, commie-adjacent leadership, and now they run the show. Somewhere there's a Hassan clip where he's like, well, of course they're anti-gays because we keep bombing them. That's the answer,
you
idiot.
Let me just say, that's an awesome talking point. They haven't had the chance to protest.
There are plenty of, ever since... There are plenty of gay and trans people. By the way, Iran is actually weirdly very pro-trans.
They're pro-trans because if they find out you're gay, they force you to chop your dick off and become a woman. I'm not joking. That's why they have that.
I know.
But I'm sure that you probably didn't know that. They're very homophobic.
I actually
didn't. They are they are very pro-trans. A lot of cultures are actually very pro-trans, way more than the United States of America.
We lead the world on this stuff. Like, I don't even know why he would pretend otherwise. Oh, it's because he's a stupid fucking American. Or the second worst thing, a Turk.
Maybe to a fault at times, like Iran, when Norse, they do forcible gender.
You look at, like, Native American...
Maybe to a fault at times, like forcible gender reassignment. That's what he was about to say, by the way.
American culture, I think it's They're extremely so popular. Norse culture, I mean, you could say the same thing about Loki, right? It's like the idea of being trans.
Oh, shit, he's talking to Asmongold here. I just realized
he was talking here, yeah.
Trans is, like, super, super, super old. Like Shiva, right? Another good example. So yes. I think that's
yes,
true.
There's a concept of third gender in India, Pakistan, and many other places as well. So...
And I think one that Emma has been talking about as well is like multiculturalism, where we live amongst each other and where multiculturalism and a respect for one another keeps us safe. And so like, I don't...
I'm so sorry, bro.
I don't want to talk about like everyone getting their Iron Dome and everyone arming up and everyone getting more and more defensive and offensive and everyone getting more violent and everyone... I mean, you know, I just did an episode that actually comes out today, which I'm very excited about, with Naomi Klein about Tucker Carlson's worldview that he has been espousing as of late. And he does view the world that way where, you know, in America, we...
Wow, Morbler, our star lefty. God, I'm glad Ukrainians aren't homophobic. I'm sorry, I don't recall supporting a Homos for Ukraine movement. Or pretending otherwise, motherfucker. What do you mean?
Should bunker down and have our white Christian nation, and everyone else is bunkered down in their own very racialized nations as well, with like
every single Arab state. Which, just curious, if we want to go full fucking Nazi, we can go full Nazi here. I'm sorry, what are the most diverse and tolerant states in the world right now? Are they Arab majority states? Are they Muslim majority states? Or are they... I don't want to say the white Christian one. Like, come on, let's be real here. If you want to break out if you want to go full neo-Nazi, we can do that.
Tons of weapons, and we're all segregated. And, like, I just find that to be such a grim reality, you know?
Yeah.
And so I think, like, I'm wondering if your politics could come from a different place philosophically, where it's not, like, what about funding also the Palestinian Iron Dome, where it's about taking away the Iron Dome from Israel, this thing that, in my opinion, allows them to continue operating as a genocidal apartheid state.
Take their dome away? This is crazy. This is a crazy talking point. Just let them get bombed, I guess, forehead.
No, what you just said is the forehead talking point, kind of, because they wouldn't just get bombed. There would be no more Palestinians in Gaza. Israel would remove them. You think any country on the planet would tolerate rocket after rocket after rocket pouring into the season?
That's true. Yeah. They would just go kill them.
It would
be
gone 100%. Not only would they be gone, every other Arab state in the region would be like, oh, what are you doing? Oh, at least we don't have to worry about it anymore. 100%, yes.
Don't bomb them.
No, and I think where you and I find agreement here is exactly that. Ideally, we should be at a place where we're not armed to the teeth against each other. We are a multicultural society in our country, and yet we have more guns than we have people in the United States. I sat on the state Senate floor
talking point.
Below
Pivot.
Four men with AR-15s and full tactical vests who, I promise you,
don't let her get away from
dead.
It.
That is not the world that I want to live in. The goal, yes, is let's have multicultural societies where we're not attacking each other. I do start at that place, and I want to make sure that... I go in recognizing that I would have a responsibility. I have a responsibility today as a state senator to check my personal beliefs at the door sometimes and make decisions that are in the best interest of protecting as many people as possible.
And do you think the Iron Dome is in service of that?
Right now, yeah.
I would love to get to a place where it's not needed, period, for anybody.
Okay. Do you believe Israel has committed and is committing a genocide?
Oh, here we go. Yes or no?
Bro, I need a yes or no piece go clip. Yes or no. Bro, oh my God. What these interviews?
We went through this on our campaign. Based on
not good. The answer's not gonna be yes. Uh-oh.
The legal definition, I've said this. I do believe that it meets the definition. What I also heard in response from many of my constituents who had family that they lost in the Holocaust is there is such a personal, visceral reaction to that word that moves us apart from each other. And when I believe that most people in both the Jewish community and the Arab community and people who are not impacted want the same outcome, why would we spend our time debating whether or not you agree with the definition of a word and recognizing we have the coalition who wants the same thing? How do we keep them together?
I think that the definition...
I think that the definition of genocide is agreed upon by the international community, and they all said it's a fucking genocide.
Is important because of international law, and we're
like not that you know none of, by the way.
Seeing right now, the Trump administration and frankly the Biden administration was also a part of the degradation of international law and the rules-based international order. And there was a Quinnipiac poll from August 2025. This has probably increased since then, that 77% of Democrats, over half of independents, believe that Israel is committing genocide.
That's crazy.
You think that it's important to articulate that just to support international law at a time?
Yeah. How's that support of international law working right now? What has that done for Donald Trump? maybe we should focus on building a real coalition of people in the United States that actually have a strong opinion with actionable policies that we can enact if we actually give a fuck about dying Palestinians. I know for people like Emma, I know that she like probably gleefully cheers every time she sees another beheaded fucking Palestinian baby or whatever, because it makes her so happy because she'll have talking points the next day for her stupid fucking YouTube podcast. But like, if you really actually want to solve the problem, it's never been done this way. It's never been done by screeching maximalist positions at anybody. Nobody's done it. They pretend Nelson Mandela did. He didn't. They pretend that Malcolm X was the reason why it happened in the United States. He wasn't. They pretend that, like, this has never been... Well, that's not true. I'm sorry what I've said. Maximalist positions have been held by people that do genocides if they want to do that. So Turkey, Germany, probably India. I don't know. Fuck them.
When the foreign policy of the United States and by extension Israel is might makes right. I think it is important to listen to everybody that I would be asking for faith and trust to represent, and to build the coalition that we need to hit the same goals. There is no doubt that war crimes have been committed. There is no doubt that the pain.
Oh, so you can say war crimes, but not genocide?
And suffering at the vast expense of our taxpayer dollars, Matt, to your point that we continue to pay for this, needs to end. And I want to keep my people together.
Don't care. Next talking point. Can we get one more big talking point here?
When so much of the emphasis is not had to tear them apart.
Yeah. I don't care. Pedantic. I really, really don't with like the genocide label. But I think to me, identifying it as a genocide is important to, like Emma said, give an internationally understood and legal label to what is currently happening.
Oh, because that's like so important. That's like, because it's going to help so much.
To a group of people. And to me, like anyone's feelings about that word, I think are not as important as like recognizing what is still happening to people right now, which is a genocide under international law, you know?
How does your family feel about it? How are those conversations going?
Well, you know, it
depends on the family.
Depends on the family member, and it's tense. But ultimately,
wow, you can't even answer a fucking question. What a fucking! It's so performative. They're such a performative fucking loser. I wish these people would just be honest. They don't give a fuck about anything, and they're just demons. These are Satan spawned people. What a giggly, happy go lucky fucking response for the largest fucking virtue signalers on the fucking internet. Just so you know, if this laugh right here was by McMorrow, the Majority Report would be playing this laugh nonstop. Look at how disgusting it was when we asked how their conversations went interpersonally, and they fucking laughed when we asked that question. Oh my fucking god.
It
depends on the family.
Depends on the family member, and it's tense. But ultimately, I assume you know you're asking that because I'm Jewish, and you'd be right for that because it's especially intergenerationally, it's a tense conversation because people have you know different levels of you know Zionist indoctrination and also different
true
sort of proximities to the Holocaust and the timeline. But
oh
I think
God.
Though the difficult conversations that are happening within my family are less important than the reality of what is happening to the Palestinian people.
So we've had those same conversations. My husband is Jewish, and though I'm a step removed, there are certainly really, really hard conversations, to your point, among generations within families. I respectfully disagree, and I believe the responsibility of a legislator, somebody who represents, I'm asking for the trust to represent.
Turkey didn't commit a genocide. It was the Ottoman Empire. Oh, Ethiopian Hussein, find me a Turkish person who wants to say that the Ottoman Empire was equally ran by Turks and Arabs. Let me know when you found that person, please. I would love to hear that.
10 million people. In a very diverse state that is a purple state that could very easily go to the Republicans. My greatest joy in this job as a legislator is when I get to help people one-on-one and when I get to be a part of their story. And keeping coalitions together is hard work. And I believe we can respect international law and
don't
the
care.
ICC and have
don't
a legislator
care.
Who respects.
Emma?
Next talking point.
Hit her up with the alley-oop, Emma. Come in here.
Their stances.
Come
and
on.
Understands that in order to move forward to the goal that I think all of us on this call share is... to keep a state like mine together and to not let this issue tear people apart. Because if we let it tear us apart, we get Mike Rogers. Trump gets a win. And there is no love lost on the other side of the aisle here with an administration that allowed Benjamin Netanyahu to convince us to go to war with Iran.
I think, you know, because we're still in the primary, especially like I'm pressing, you know, Democrats a little bit more on this because we're not yet really talking about the general. And, you know, you say...
Oh, so you're going to press less on this than the general? Funny joke, fucking moron.
That it's more important to keep the coalition together than to sort of fracture over this one issue. But I don't know. I think for me, and I'm not trying to be antagonistic at all, I promise. But
I'm not trying to be what?
But I don't know. I think for me, and I'm not trying to be antagonistic at all, I promise. But sort of when I look at what a candidate like Dr. Abdullah Sayed is doing around this issue, it doesn't feel like we actually have to abandon dignity and actual justice for Palestinians to keep that coalition together. I mean, like we said at the beginning, you guys are all, you know, neck and neck.
Yeah, and I agree with you. I don't think we need to either. And that's not my goal at all. I guess, you know, on this topic, we've exhausted it a little bit. But you also have groups like Amnesty International, Human Rights Watch, and the Israeli organization itself, B'Tselem, calling it a genocide. So I read that out. Human Rights Watch. We've exhausted it a little bit. But you also have groups like Amnesty International, Human Rights Watch, and the Israeli organization itself, B'Tselem, calling it a genocide. So I read that out just because I think
the Israeli organization itself, B'Tselem, she doesn't even know what B'Tselem is. B'Tselem is literally founded for like Palestinian Rights Watch group in Israel. That's not just like a random Israeli. That is like the, that's like saying even in the United States of America, the U.S. organization, the NAACP, feels like African Americans are being discriminated. Like, do you even know what you're saying? God, I hate how little, I don't care. It's just so performative. It's so fucking gross how little these people know about any fucking thing they're talking about.
The Israeli organization itself, B'Tselem, calling it a genocide. So I read that out just because I think that when we're talking about...
I'll donate $20 million to your campaign if you ask her right now. Go back in time, Aaron Yeager, please. You have to ask her, what is B'Tselem? Just curious. Just kidding.
How to keep a coalition together. The 77% of Democrats that think Israel's committing genocide, the 90% of Democrats that do not, that are, have a negative view of Israel or don't want to send them more money, that would, I would imagine, be the position that would be as unifying as possible, because it appears like this is kind of a consensus opinion now within the Democratic base.
I mean, I hear that it's reflective in polls and reading polls and asserting how campaigns should be run based off of polls is not a way that you win in a state like ours. And Matt, I hear that you
Well, it's both polls and morality. Both polls and international law and morality.
And talk.
Oh, morality, international law. That's how you win elections in the United States. That's why Donald Trump won the last election.
Talking about morality, Trump put out an AI
generated
video of
Gaza being rebuilt with a crazy ad and won the election. Say it.
Trump Gaza. And has told us we cannot afford daycare, we cannot afford Medicare, we cannot afford Medicaid. And not only that, but that states should tax themselves even more to pay for those selfish things so that we can pay for a war that he took us into because Netanyahu convinced him to do so. And every single Republican in the House and the Senate refused to vote on the War Powers Resolution. So I agree. You'll find agreement. And I live and serve in a deeply purple state that has to focus on November.
Yep.
Mike Rogers and the tens of millions of dollars that will be funneled into this state, because it is a coalition of as many people in the state as possible. You don't win in Michigan without independents. You don't win in Michigan without Republicans. So it is keeping the Democrats together, keeping the Democrats engaged, keeping our diverse communities together to recognize we have the shared goals. We do. And it's hard work, and it's work that I'm in every single day. So hopefully, you see, there's not disagreement here, but it is the work every single day in keeping our people together so that we don't lose a seat to somebody who would rubber stamp everything Trump wants to do, who will certainly not end this war or secure security for Palestinians anytime soon if it were up to him.
Yeah. When was this stupid fucking tweet? April 4th, 2026. I was recently speaking with a Palestinian woman who told me that she, in fact, hated Biden more because he pretended to care while carrying out a genocide of her family. Oh my, give me a fucking break.
And I'll wrap up. I know you probably have to run. Busy day running a campaign. I think neither of us would argue that, like, every Republican is doing all of this and worse, you know, much worse. And none of us would argue, you know, in favor of anything Trump is doing. I just think especially, you know, during primary season when we are, you know, being given the chance to put our, you know, what we think is our best Democrat forward, that we're, you know, pushing you on some of these issues, because I think something that I'm sure you've heard is that a lot of Democratic voters feel like we have an establishment that isn't fighting sufficiently.
And I 100% agree with you.
Yeah.
This is a party that's not meeting this moment, not only on this issue, but on voting rights, on civil rights, on childcare and healthcare and housing. There is so much at stake here, which is why I'm doing what I can. I believe truly that we built a blueprint in Michigan in the legislature when we flipped control of the legislature for the first time in my entire lifetime that we can take with
Don't
us
care.
To Washington
Don't care.
And build a party that knows Don't how to care. Fight and knows how to win and knows how to actually get things done for people.
Totally. And I just want to mention, like, you know, as a New Yorker, I got to rep my city and, you know, push back on the idea that we have to make these sort of like middle of the road concessions on some of these issues, especially like a humanitarian issue. You know, we had.
Because Mamdani won for mayor of New York City. New York City. You think that's a purple? You think it's a purple city?
Mayor Zoran Mamdani, who just won in my city. And, you know, 1 in 10 Mamdani voters also voted for Trump. There was a small but mighty MAGA for Mamdani coalition. And you know what? It's confounding, but that's...
Oh, my fucking God.
I guess, it's amazing. It's how the world works. And, you know, he's someone who really didn't concede on his beliefs on any of these issues.
Literally, so he did walk back. Remember Globalize the Intifada? He definitely walked back on that one. What do you mean he didn't concede on anything?
Walked back on his son, too.
True!
Encourage you to do the same. Mallory, thank you so much for joining today. I really mean it. It's a pleasure to be able to talk to you.
Thanks so much.
Yeah, likewise. Thank you to you both.
Cool. And that is our interview. I've been really enjoying talking to candidates, honestly, more than I thought I would.
Why? You're not even having a conversation with them. You're just doing a slop hit piece. You're running down a list of questions.
And making these sort of like auxiliary episodes has just been a sort of nice creative outlet for me, in addition to like the conceptual episodes we make over here. I want to thank Mallory again for coming on and giving us her time, especially given that she probably knew we'd disagree on some things. She was gracious for that, truly. And I owe it to you, the listener, to say that I struggle to make sense of some of what Mallory McMorrow put forth here, particularly as it pertains to the funding of Israel's defense infrastructure. She initially defended that policy by saying it's what keeps people safe. But I don't know. Does it? I think it keeps one group of people safe.
I can't watch this. They're reading a script. You see, they're reading a script, right?
Yeah.
Look at their eye. They're just reading a script.
They don't care. Yeah.
They don't even give a fuck about this issue.
Particularly as it pertains to the funding of Israel's defense infrastructure. She initially defended that policy by saying it's what keeps people safe. But I don't know. Does it? I think it keeps one group of people
safe. They can't even read the whole script at the same, and they have to do a jump cut.
While enabling the ongoing violent oppression of another group of people. But toward the end of the conversation, she backed away from defending that policy on its merits, instead saying, sometimes we as politicians must put our personal beliefs aside for the sake of building a larger coalition. And okay, but as Emma said, there's tons of emerging data that shows continued aid to Israel is no longer a popular position in the Democratic Party, to which Mallory said that she isn't running a campaign on polling data. Fair enough. But if you're not running on polling data, and you're also
not running on morality
off of your belief system,
what are you running
then
on?
I struggle to make sense of where exactly
APAC.
These policy positions are
APAC.
Coming from.
APAC.
And to me, APAC. It's this opaqueness in decision making that is the frustrating thing about the Democratic establishment, which Mallory claims to be
Mapper.
Anyway, that's my show. Hope you liked it. Hope you enjoyed being here on an
We didn't. It was trash. Emma Vigeland corners Mallory McMorrow on single payer healthcare.
But you gotta bring up the fucking Abdul thing too.
I do you support.
This is the thing. Do you see how they're doing the funnel? This is what I'm talking about. You do the interview, you get the talking points, then you run it through your medium, the medium part for the media, or whatever, the reactions to it. Now she's lucky because she gets to react to her own interview, and then all the talking points are going to be there for social media, and then you'll see these talking points used to attack McMorrow that all of the El Sayed supporters are going to be using for the next, you know, couple weeks until the next interview cycle.
For funding to Israel's defense infrastructure.
The problem with an Iron Dome for the Palestinians would be the tanks and that would come in the invading military. But be that as it may, you have I'm calling for an Iron Dome for the Palestinians. Maybe even higher than that on that scale would be I'm not going to vote for anything, for any authorization military spending that doesn't provide that.
Yeah.
Then you're calling for it. It would be less than that, right? Mm-hmm. You're not voting for it. And then you are having a conversation about calling for it.
Yes.
And then you have just a conversation, not involving the vote.
She really thinks she cooked in this interview. She sounded like she was a high school student doing an interview. That's what she sounded like. Like, I have to do an interview. I'm going to write down the questions I'm going to ask the interviewer or the interviewee. And she really thinks she cooked.
And you have, let's talk about having the conversation.
Yes, I love when Matt goes, well, I mean, Iron Dome's for everybody, apparently for Iran as well. Yeah, so.
I mean, our military industrial contractors will like that.
Yes. Netflix. And we did end up playing, which was kind of
state level, so you can't lose your healthcare with a pre-existing condition.
She's not even in the clips they're playing. Look, she's tight. You can see when somebody's typing on a laptop because the camera shakes because it's all one thing.
Senate, I have led on efforts to codify the Affordable Care Act on the state level, so you can't lose your healthcare with a pre-existing condition. We repealed our
right to abortion. I should just say, there is one healthcare system that has been cut by RFK Jr. and Donald Trump and the Republicans, and that is the Affordable Care Act. The Affordable Care Act subsidies were rolled back and the expansion on the Medicaid. Like, if you wanted to develop something that was protected from two politicians being in charge of it, it wasn't Obamacare. Because all they had to do was cut back on subsidies to private and health insurance. Because it's so narrowly tailored that you don't have the widespread revulsion that would come if everybody in the country was like, I'm on Medicare. Instead of just everybody over the age of 65, I'm on Medicare.
Yeah.
And they messed with me. Oh, God. This is like your kid made a dog shit argument. You brought your dad to beat the other kid.
My Medicare. That's the point. That's why they don't want it to be.
Wow. Maybe you should have done the interview instead of letting this fucking moron do it then.
Everybody, not just to have health insurance, but everybody on the same program and in the same sort of playing field.
Understand where you're coming from. This is an administration that has slashed access to mifepristone. This is an administration who.
Okay. She clipped that. There wasn't somebody like us. Going to her speech and clipping it. They clipped that section and
put it
up on Twitter themselves.
Yep.
Wait, what?
Going to her speech and clipping it. Okay, she clipped that. There wasn't somebody like us going to her speech and clipping it. They clipped that section and
put it
up on Twitter themselves.
Yep.
Okay.
Well, it sounds like what she's saying is you got no sense of humor, mm-hmm. Emma. You didn't get the joke. It's fine.
Yeah, yeah, listen. I honestly, okay. I forgot that's how she answered it because I haven't seen this since, you know, we recorded it on
Well, it's because you weren't paying attention.
I know, but yeah, yeah.
That is stunning.
Yeah. Lib and Learn talking about the interview. Why would I want to listen to Pisco defend the two dipshits interviewing him the entire time and about how based it is to constantly ask questions about Israel-Palestine because it's the most important thing to virtue signal on? We'll watch this one tomorrow. I have a meeting in 15 minutes. But, oh, fuck. I'm not going to get triggered by this.
Pro interview. For example, did you guys all watch that interview with Matt and Emma?
No.
It was not
you know,
like
you know his name now, right? You just call him the gay guy.
Matt Berenstein, I think his name is. Matt Berenstein and Emma Bigland. The tone wasn't super aggressive, but the subtext was. Like, they were definitely kind of dripping with contempt. And I just, like, in that kind of spot, I wonder if McMorrow understood that she was walking into an interview with, you know, two people who probably, like, think that she supports genocide and whatever else thing they're going with. Same with Slotkin. I'm not sure if she was aware of the venue that she was walking into on Breaking Points. And, you know, it's not to say she never do these kinds of interviews, but maybe we're straying from the point. But
well, I think there's something there, but I want to reject the framing that this is about the insurgent left or the populist left versus the insider left or the more normal left, because the people who are frustrated with Ken Martin the most are people who are, like, state chairs and are the insider left or the more normal left, because the people who are frustrated with Ken Martin the most are people who are, like, state chairs and are people who are inside the DNC and are people who I don't think can be classified as, like...
Doesn't matter. The frustrations are totally different. They're a totally different set of frustrations. And to pretend like it's the same is not true. I think people are frustrated at Ken Martin for the lack of leadership, for kind of how disappointing the autopsy was, for how disappointing... literally everything surrounding it, his statements about it a long time ago. But I don't know if party leaders are... In fact, I don't believe that people in the Democratic Party actually are frustrated with Ken Martin. Now, maybe they are, and I've just missed this over the past couple of weeks, but the last time I saw articles about it, it was always just like an anonymous person said, reportedly anonymous people in, anonymous people, whatever. But, like, I don't see that anywhere. I haven't seen it, like, in any solidified form.
Like, hater of Dems. These are the Podsafe people. These are, you know, New York Times type people. So I don't really...
The Podsafe people. Oh, my God.
I really think that the criticisms of Ken Martin can all be dialed into awareness about how bad faith some lefties are.
No, that's right. But the initial major grievance, I would say, was driven by the insurgent left with the Gaza narrative.
Yep.
And I would say the Podsafe guys are aligned with them. But
yes,
you're right. The State
correct.
Party...
That's
the
correct.
State have been,
the Obama. Yeah. What? The Obama guy? You know how long ago Obama was president? 10 years, it's gone. We're done with Obama. Jesus Christ.
I'm the types.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. At this point, I'm not saying they're like tankies or whatever, but I think that they. I speculate
that's like just most of the Democratic Party, huh? Just
that's
like
most of the Democrats. No, it's not. God, I hate this show. Lib and Learn. Get me out of here. Okay, Jesus fuck. I can't. I'm gonna get too triggered watching these fucking retards run cover for the fucking tankies. Okay. Wait, have you ever seen the Emma Vigilant Africa thing?
Not to my knowledge.
Do you remember when the Cleopatra thing happened and there were a bunch of conservatives that were mad that Cleopatra was played by...
Yeah.
The notion that Cleopatra was black is silly. But again, you're allowed to do this in Hollywood because, of course, the only thing that matters is our weird, parochially American perception of what race matters. It's super, super strange. By the way, we actually have sculptures of Cleopatra. It's not as though there's like nothing to indicate what Cleopatra looked like. There's a Roman sculpture of Cleopatra from the mid-first century.
First of all, it's the left that's being parochial. Not the guy that can't go on a map and see which continent is Egypt on, Ben. Facts over feelings. Ben Shapiro doesn't understand that,
it's
like...
It's the north of...
Yeah.
Africa?
Like,
these are serious political commentators.
They think that every country in Africa is like, are like rappers. Like, she thinks that all of them look like Tupac and Jay-Z. And like, I just actually cannot even believe. I don't know if you've commented on politics ever, if you don't know anything about like the Middle East, or like, it's impossible to have. This is just such an unbelievable statement to make. I don't know, bro. I will always hate her.
It's all cooked, man.
Everything relating to this, yeah. And everything. Get me out of here.
Hey, hey.
Hi.
Hey, so are you aware of the context of this interview?
The McMorrow one?
Yeah, there's a little bit more context to it.
I mean, I heard what the guy said at the beginning where they were going to do it, and then they apparently missed each other. They had to cancel, and then he claimed it was because he thinks they're homophobic and didn't like his nail polish or something, and then they rescheduled it, and then they managed to do the interview.
So there's that. So, like, I just want you to take note of the intro and the outro is a very different tone than the interview itself. He's obviously, like, much more kind of friendly and sheepish during the interview,
of
but
course.
Then, like, very, very hostile in the intro and the outro. But the real context was he was on Twitter
like hyping up this interview, basically accusing her of like soft supporting a genocide.
Of course.
And then accused them of canceling the interview because they were afraid that he was going to press him on genocide.
Okay.
So it's just a little extra context that makes the whole thing a lot more funny.
I agree.
Take note of the contrast of the tone.
We already finished it. We were going to watch the El Sayed one tomorrow just for memes. But like one thing to take note when you're watching these interviews, I don't know if you've noticed this or not, but like first of all, these people have no knowledge whatsoever related to Israel-Palestine or related to Medicare for All or anything. They don't know anything about it. And you can tell because when they're running down their like hit piece list of questions, notice that they don't do a single follow-up or engage with McMorrow on anything she says. It's just like they ask a question, she gives sometimes a decently well thought out answer even, and then they just go to the next one and say, okay, moving on, and that's it. They can't actually have like a back and forth engagement on literally anything being said besides like the maximalist positions that they have, and that's it.
Yeah.
It's really, really, really embarrassing. It should be fucking humiliating if you're in media and you get the opportunity to interview people that could be, you know, senators, and like this is the quality of conversation that you're capable of having. It's insane to
it's
me.
Not even like interviews. It's just like, I don't know.
It's a hit piece list of, yeah, exactly. Yeah. But
So I think I'm going to have an opportunity to interview McMorrow myself. And I want to ask her if she's aware of like the dynamic. I just want to ask her straight up, like, do you guys understand that these people like literally fucking hate you?
Sure. I think a really good question, if you have the opportunity to talk to her, I think a really good question is, how do you balance out like the online presence that lib left people are trying to have in purple districts with the further left media apparatus that exists online? Because she has to win elections in Michigan, right? So like, yeah. But she's not giving an interview in Michigan. She's giving an interview to an online audience that might be from across the country that has much, much, much different positions than, you know, what she has to represent in her state. So how do they pick those interviews? What's her strategy for approaching those interviews? Like, I'd be really interested to hear her walk through that, because especially like when you have people, God, the two interviewers, Emma's just such a fucking idiot. She's so stupid. I don't know where that $50,000 a year for her fucking grade school education went towards, because she didn't learn a fucking thing. Like, their inability to engage on any part of that just drove me crazy.
Yeah, that would be the grown-up way of asking the question. I'll probably be mature about it. But no, you're hitting on the same kind of thing that I'm curious about. Because I just don't know if they have, like, my theory is that they need to hire more Zoomers. You know, like, I thought she handled herself really well.
She definitely did, yeah.
The campaigns definitely need, I don't know how many Zoomer staff they have that are aware of the vitriol, like the level of the vitriol. Like, I have a sense that the candidates probably, you know, understand that there's some hostility from like the insurgent populist left, but I don't know if they know how deep it goes. And it kind of reminded me of the interview with a slot candidate. I think like both women handled both of those interviews really well. And it's another one of those Rorschach tests where, you know, like the left and Majority Report fans think that, you know, Emma like handed McMorrow her ass. And when I watch it, it feels like I'm watching an adult try to explain really basic concepts to, you know, teenagers or something.
It definitely feels like a high school interview. Crystal Ball, at the very least, she's much more, much, much, much more, I hate to even say it, but she's much more intelligent than Emma Vigeland is, who can't engage on any of these topics. She's completely out of her depth. Crystal Ball could at least do like challenging follow-ups and stuff. But yeah, that interview even was like, it was an ambush and a purity tester. I really wish that these guys would have open conversations sometimes, because like they really are pushing for maximalist positions that even people in the Middle East, even in Israel-Palestine, would never push for or don't want, because they are totally unworkable. But whatever.
Yeah, that's a whole other debate. But yeah, I just wanted to make you aware of the context, because it's pretty funny. He was talking so much shit on Twitter and on the intro and the outro, and he had to bring in Emma to be like a bulldog during the interview. So
sure.
Yeah.
All right,
man.
Have fun. I don't remember when they did this interview, but it was released 9 days ago. This was their interview with one of three, I think, competitive Democrats that are running in the race. The famous/infamous, depending on how you look at it, our fake doctor, Abdul El Sayed. I don't like the fact that this guy is around Hassan, obviously. I think the fake doctor stuff is kind of cringe. And I don't like the sloppiest stuff, but the positions on his website seem okay. So I don't think I hate this Abdul El Sayed guy yet.
There is one man in the United States that Democrats must defeat if we ever want to come together as a country again. According to Democratic congresspeople like Cory Booker and Alyssa Slotkin,
he's going to say Hassan Piker, isn't he?
Brad Schneider and John Fetterman, as well as liberal media pundits like Jake Tapper.
Controversial, if not outrageous, if not bigoted.
He's a bigot.
a danger to the soul of America, an outrageous man with a checkered past whose power in American politics must be curtailed immediately. He's Hassan. Not the president, you silly dum-dum. Or he's leftist Twitch streamer Hassan Piker. A man I could uncontroversially label the single most popular and relevant figure in the online left. Hassan Piker live streams for 8 hours every single day and typically has between 20 and 40,000 concurrent viewers. Hassan Piker live...
Can we see the shot caller here or...
Live streams for 8 hours every single day and typically has between 20 and 40,000 concurrent viewers with a total Twitch following of more than 3 million. He's a fierce critic of Israel.
Anti-Semitism is a canary in the coal mine of fascism. It's one of the oldest bigotries that has caused those of the Jewish faith a tremendous amount of pain. From pogroms to the Holocaust, Jews have always been singled out by those in power as a scapegoat for instability and economic volatility people in power cause. A resilient, nascent anti-Semitism is a constant threat, especially as economic instability makes those in power seek out old targets. This is precisely the reason why I am terrified of the conflation of anti-Zionism and anti-Semitism.
Oh my God.
The conflation is dangerous. Valid criticisms against the...
He wants to protect the Jews, guys.
...state, especially as all of the violence is unfolding, and everyone can see it, and tying it back to Judaism as a cynical ploy to stop all matter of conversation is truly terrifying.
A fierce proponent of taxing billionaires and the closest thing we have to the long sought after Joe Rogan
of the left.
Rogan of the left. Given Hassan's unprecedented ability to bring young men into the fold of progressive politics instead of fascism, Democrats should love him. They should go on his stream. They should invite him to things. But most of them are deathly afraid of Hassan Piker and refuse to speak to him. They're so afraid of him, in fact, that they've launched a smear campaign against him. And as a professional reviewer of smear campaigns myself, I must say, it is shocking to see someone who isn't a woman get treated like this by the media. Today, in this a bit fruity minisode, a first. Let me know if you like these. Let me know if you want more of them. I want to explore the Democratic establishment's war on Hassan Piker, what it's really about, and what they're leaving on the table by waging it. To do that, I am so thrilled to be joined by Abdul El Sayed.
Oh, we're interviewing this guy. Oh, I forgot for a second that this guy was even here. I thought we were doing a Hassan Glaze piece. My bad.
Did it for U.S. Senate from the great state of Michigan.
Is there any actual evidence of Hassan converting people? No, none. None whatsoever. Because he probably doesn't. That's just a made up thing. Which is funny because they usually make fun of me for converting people by saying that my whole audience is composed of or comprised of ex-Nazis. Like, that's why they always says, or he used to say a lot that I have an audience full of Nazis, but I don't know. It's just people just say whatever the fuck.
Michigan, who controversially made a campaign stop this week alongside Hassan Piker, and who was admonished for it by many in the Democratic establishment, but it didn't stop him.
Hassan Piker just recently became an issue in Michigan. Dr. Abdul El Sayed, one of the three candidates and a former CNN commentator, announced that Piker will join him for two rallies in April.
Now to the Michigan Senate race, where a Democratic candidate is forging a controversial alliance with a left-wing streamer who has defended Hamas terrorists. Abu El Sayed campaigned yesterday with 34-year-old Hassan Piker.
Abdul El Sayed, welcome to the show.
Matt, thank you so much for having me.
Two liberal outlets. Nice. I guess the right wing didn't have anything to say about it. Okay, based.
Ready to be here.
How was last night? You appeared alongside Hassan Piker. I mean, I don't know. Like, did he eat you? Like, was everything okay?
You know, you'd have thought with the Twitter controversy over the last 2 weeks while our madman president was fighting an illegal, unjustifiable war, that this was the most important question of the century. And no, he did not eat me, did not eat Representative Summer Lee, who was with us as well. Wow. And instead, what we did was we came together to talk about what it means to get money out of politics, put money in your pocket, pass Medicare for all, stand up against illegal wars, abolish ICE, and have a...
There has to be... If straight men shouldn't be doing this, then no other group of people should be doing this, okay? Bruh. Jesus Christ. This is my impartial media. I guess they don't pretend to be impartial. I don't know if they do or not. Okay.
Because we came together to talk about what it means to get money out of politics, put money in your pocket, pass Medicare for all, stand up against illegal wars, abolish ICE, and have a conversation about what it takes to bring people together around that message. And it turns out that when you actually go and talk to people, you're willing to persuade them on what you believe, you can win elections. You know, everybody paid attention to our campaigning with Hassan. I started my day yesterday on Fox and Friends, mm-hmm. where, look, there are a lot of things me and the Fox and Friends hosts are going to disagree on. But that doesn't mean that I'm not going to go and have a conversation with some lovely boomers who have been duped by the MAGA movement into thinking that somehow this president wasn't going to start another war to enrich himself and his friends. So, you know, I'm going to go everywhere, talk to everybody, because that's how you campaign in the year of our Lord, 2026.
Yeah, it also looked like the lines to get in were extremely long. So I don't know. I guess the college students just didn't hear Jake Tapper's condemnations of Hassan Piker.
You know, it turns out, like, tutting people about...
Remember when they said over and over again that Bernie Sanders was going to dominate in every single primary because his audiences, especially with college kids, are so huge?
Who they should not listen to is the best single way to make sure they listen to that person.
Talk about it. In gay world, we call that the Streisand effect. Abdul, just for appearing alongside Hassan Piker, your detractors have spent the last few weeks smearing you as all sorts of things by proxy. Your opponent in the Michigan Senate race, Mallory McMorrow, she likened Hassan Piker to the far-right neo-Nazi Nick Fuentes. She's not alone in that comparison. Could you characterize these smears and explain where they're actually coming from? Because, you know, as like a Jewish person who respects Hassan for his principles and deeply rejects Nick Fuentes, it just feels so dishonest and frankly offensive.
Yeah, I can't answer to why some...
Remember the difference between the McMurrow one? Now we're in friendly land. Lots of yes and, lots of layup questions. We call that a layup question.
Comparison, could you characterize these smears and explain where they're actually coming from? Because, you know, as like a Jewish person who respects Hassan for his principles and deeply rejects Nick Fuentes, it just feels so dishonest and frankly offensive.
Yeah.
That's a layup. Yeah, agree with me. Yes and.
I can't answer to why somebody says what they say, but I can try my best to assess the context in which they say it. You know, what's ironic to me is that the last one of us who actually campaigned with Hassan was Senator McMurrow at the 2024 DNC when they were both there to campaign for Vice President Kamala Harris. Mm-hmm. And you didn't get this clapback from the likes of Third Way, from the likes of the ADL, from the likes of AIPAC when Hassan was invited to the DNC. But when he decided to come and campaign for me, mm-hmm. there was a whole different clapback. And I'll leave it to your very smart, very thoughtful audience to try and figure out why.
Never mind. I hate this fucking guy. Never mind. That we have to get Haley Stevens out of the fucking race. We got to get Haley out. I'm sorry. She's got to go. Not this. Not the Islamophobic shit. Please, God. Oh, my God. It's so fucking cringe. Oh, my God. Why weren't people mad that the DNC wasn't criticized for inviting Hassan Piker to the Democratic National Convention, where we were all coming together to celebrate Kamala Harris and where tons and tons and tons of people were invited to go and attend as content creators and influencers, not as people standing side by side to like campaign alongside a candidate? Come on, it's not even close to the same comparison. Oh my God.
To campaign for Vice President Kamala Harris. Mm-hmm. And you didn't get this clapback from
hold on.
One of us who actually campaigned with...
Clearly offensive.
Yeah, I can't answer to why somebody says what they say, but I can try my best to assess the context in which they say it. You know, what's ironic to me is that the last one of us who actually campaigned with Hassan was Senator McMurrow at the 2024 DNC when they were both there to campaign for Vice President Kamala Harris.
I hate this guy. I won't support him also. That's not a vote blue no matter who for me. I won't support the Republican, but like, fuck. Come on. Do we just have to lie about fucking everything? Hassan was literally with the uncommitted most of the time he was there, and then he stepped in and got kicked out in like 2 minutes. This guy was there to campaign with McMurrow and with Kamala Harris? My God.
Mm-hmm. And you didn't get this clapback from the likes of Third Way, from the likes of the ADL, from the likes of AIPAC when Hassan was invited to the DNC. But when he decided to come and campaign for me, mm-hmm. there was a whole different clapback. And I'll leave it
because they're Islamophobic.
To your very smart, very thoughtful audience to try and figure out why. Maybe it has something to do with the similarities that he and I share. Now, the reality of it.
I'm sorry, mate, but you are 20 times more likely to get profiled or hated because of your, first of all, just your name versus fucking Hassan and the way that he presents. It's not even close, but I mean, we can pretend, I guess. If you want to lend him some of your minority credibility, I mean, by all means, fucking go for it, chief.
It is that the reason I stand against anti-Semitism, the reason I categorically oppose any attempt to smear Judaism or the Jewish people is because I love people. And I believe it shouldn't matter how you pray. As somebody who is of Muslim faith, I believe that you deserve equal rights to peace, dignity, self-determination, mm-hmm. equal rights to be venerated and appreciated for who you are.
I also don't trust this anymore. I'm going to always assume you're a bad faith actor who is doing some kind of like weird subversive stuff. Nobody, I'll repeat this for the trillionth time. When you talk about Judaism or whatever, I don't even know what the fuck Judaism. When you talk about Jewish people, we're not talking about the religion. We're not talking about how you pray. We're talking about ethnicities. We're talking about a protected ethnostate for Israel, for the country, for a Jewish majority ethnicity. That's what we're talking about. Any weird thing of like, well, I don't care how you pray, that blah, blah, blah. That's not really at all what we're talking about. And I don't trust anybody that uses that. I feel that's a dog whistle.
I believe that you deserve equal rights to peace, dignity, self-determination, mm-hmm. equal rights to be venerated and appreciated for who you are. It's also the reason I oppose Israel's actions. I oppose genocide. I oppose AIPAC trying to tie our foreign policy interests to the interests of a foreign government. I oppose sending $3+ billion a year to subsidize a foreign military. That is Israel, but that's also Egypt. That's also Saudi Arabia and Jordan and Pakistan, all countries who receive tax dollars that you and I pay to provide for our schools here and our healthcare here. I oppose all of those things because I love people. It goes back to the same set of principles. So don't tell me that you stand against anti-Semitism and believe in equality when you cannot oppose a genocide being perpetrated by our tax dollars. Wow. Those two things are one and the same. Now, there are a lot of folks who want to stretch the meaning of anti-Semitism to include righteous opposition against the actions of a foreign government. I will never be okay with that because my principles are fundamentally about justice. They're fundamentally about a love of people. And so, look, you know, people are trying to make this into some sort of tribal thing, but I was raised by my father, who's an Egyptian immigrant, my stepmom, Jackie, who's a daughter of the American Revolution. I've never fit comfortably into any tribe. The tribe I'm from is the tribe of Michigan. And here in Michigan, we want our tax dollars to be funding healthcare in Michigan, in schools in Michigan, to be funding the ability for folks to live a dignified life in Michigan. And as the future senator from Michigan, that's going going to be my focus. So when I watch as folks in D.C. bend to the power of a super PAC funded by MAGA billionaire dollars in the form of AIPAC, telling us that the best use of Michigan tax dollars are somewhere else, I'm going to call bullshit. I'm going to call bullshit every time. And Hassan has been calling bullshit too. And people are trying to then say, well, that's because of some sort of animus. No, it's because we love people. We love Jewish people. We love Palestinian people. We love all people. And it's a responsibility to stand up and fight against them. So, you know, I'm going to reject the smear. And at the end of the day, what somebody else does in their campaign is really not of my concern. I'm more focused on defending the people in the state of Michigan rather than defending myself.
Come on, principled messaging. I mean, look, as someone who lives in New York and who...
Whoa, what do you mean you're more worried about the people of Michigan? I thought for Mallory McMorrow, wasn't it really important to say, hold on, as a senator, you need to use your leverage in order to force the, I don't know what the fuck, somehow the United States to not support anybody anywhere or whatever. Why do we care so much about the people of Michigan now? Where's that same energy for, aren't you going to use your influence in the Senate to pull all funding from Israel and international shit? I guess it's kind of like baked in as the assumption, but that answer was not really in the same vein as what this guy was looking for from Mallory, but okay.
Who just saw very similar conversations play out over the entirety of the New York City mayoral campaign with Soran Mamdani. It is interesting to me how these public figures, whether or not they're even running for office, which Hassan Piker is not. So it's interesting that we all have to come together to condemn a Twitch streamer.
Well, because you're literally running alongside this person and you're more or less endorsing him as he endorses you. Like, for instance, just pretend, replace, to help you fucking morons figure this out, replace Abdul al-Sayed with Kamala Harris and replace Hassan Piker with what you thought Liz Cheney was doing last election. Then maybe you'll understand a little bit more why people are so ass-pain. Except the difference is that Hassan is literally closely aligned with Abdul al-Sayed and is trying to say they have similar policy positions and everything else, whereas Liz Cheney was just saying a lot of people don't like Trump and them anymore, so, you know, we need somebody to vote for that'll save our democracy.
But regardless, you see these public figures turned into symbols and...
I just don't understand why these leftists are all so classless. Why attack Democrats at every opportunity when you need regular Democrats to get you in office? Because they're not, because that's the only way that they can grow as a party is to siphon off voters from the Democrats. They will never, these guys don't convert MAGA or convert people from the fucking right or convert fucking moderates. They can only exist in the most deepest mind fucked places of blue districts. I think the one win that they've had of their 168 whatever fucking candidates so far, the one win they've had in a Democratic primary was, I think, the literally the most blue district in the entire United States. That's all they can do.
I'm a Twitch streamer. But regardless, you see these public figures turned into symbols and sort of proxy wars for people's position on Israel by these bad faith actors. And that's, you know, what's so interesting to me is because Hassan Piker, in this case, the reason they call him anti-Semitic, Hassan Piker's not anti-Semitic. He's an anti-Zionist, which I am, which, you know, Zoran Mamdani is, which many of us are. And for good reason, look what it is.
It's so gross, too, that they try to trade so hard on Mamdani's reputation. Mamdani is a 20 trillion times better than any of you fucking crazy lunatics. And the fact that they try so hard to throw their lot in with him and to be associated with him is cringe as fuck.
Israel is doing to Palestine, to the world. That, of course, gets conflated and they get called anti-Semitic.
I'll tell you this, Matt. You know, it's sad to me when we lack the courage as a society to speak basic foundational truths that are the kind of truths that they write children's books about. Mm-hmm. You know, like, these things are not that hard. Mm-hmm. No one group of people has a monopoly on pain. No one group of people gets to be better than any other group of people. Mm-hmm. All people deserve mm-hmm. equal rights to peace, dignity, and self-determination. Mm-hmm. Those are not that hard to say. But when you've got the likes of the ADL, you've got the likes of Third Way, mm-hmm. all trying to ram down our throats, something we all know at the pit of our core is just unfair and untrue. At the end of the day, the question to me is, where do you stand? And too often we've watched as Democratic politicians who should know better are now bending over backwards to justify public policies that they know are inconsistent with their own beliefs. And I'll just tell you this, like, my second ever presidential election was for Barack Hussein Obama. I was wow. so proud to vote for him. It was the first time I ever saw myself.
Can you talk to these YouTubers? No, all these people will infinitely always...
They'll run.
Yeah, they don't ever have challenging conversations ever.
A politician at all. I mean, you know, his dad immigrated from Africa. My dad immigrated from a different part of Africa. He had mixed parents. I was raised by mixed parents. You know, he's got a funny name. I got a funny name. He is tall and skinny. I'm decidedly not tall and relatively thick. But beyond that, like, I saw myself in somebody for the first time. And the best thing he did was he stood up against a stupid war that everybody understood was ridiculous. And he was able to explain it.
Never mind.
In very simple language. I don't know what happened in the next 18 years when our party became the party of war again. And I'm just trying to say that if we're about our principles, let's be about our principles anywhere and everywhere. Because if there are exceptions, then at the end of the day, our foundational belief in equality is not being met. And I just think that is what
people judge. Democrats became the party of war?
I don't, let me re-listen, hold on.
I saw myself in somebody for the first time. And the best thing he did was he stood up against a stupid war that everybody understood was ridiculous. And he was able to explain it in very simple language. I don't know what happened in the next 18 years when our party became the party of war again. And
People hate, these guys don't like Barack Obama. They're not like as open with it because they still have to try to trick mm-hmm. black people to voting for him and to pretend that they're like representing their interests. But these people all fucking hate Obama. If you find them in the right space or you listen to them talk closely, that it'll come out. They fucking hate. They hate Obama.
What do they hate? That he just...
Because he was pro-America. They don't like the ACA. Sometimes they'll blame Obama for not going far enough with the public option. They'll blame Obama for not making abortion legal federally, like a law across the entire United States.
How could he get the public option?
Why are you even asking this question? Why are you even asking this question? What a stupid. It's because Obama hates America and because he was a corporate shill.
Yeah, true.
They hate the fact that the whole Gaddafi-Libya thing, they don't like any foreign stuff. They don't like Syria. Like they hate Obama. They do.
They hate America. All right, I got it.
I'm just trying to say that if we're about our principles, let's be about our principles anywhere and everywhere. Because if there are exceptions, then at the end of the day, our foundational belief in equality is not being met. And I just think that that is what people will judge you on. Everyday folk want to know that you care about their issues and that you understand what they're facing. And if you're more interested in what's happening in somewhere abroad and you are willing to send their taxpayer dollars somewhere else to destroy someone else's life, money that could be spent to improve our own, they're going to fault you for it. So don't be surprised when we don't win elections because we are hypocritical on our own values. And I want Democrats to win. And I want us to win because I want us to be clear about what we believe. It's not enough to be against Donald Trump. Obviously, the man is an egotistical, egomaniacal, now genocidal maniac who doesn't have the basic cognitive capacity that is deserving of the job. And at the same time, it's not enough to just point to him and be like, oh, well, he sucks. Clearly, he sucks. So why are you better?
No, he was praising Obama, then saying we went downhill after. No, no. Listen to what he said. Hold on.
We'll judge you on. Everyday folk want to know that you care about our principles, language. I don't know what happened in the next stupid war that everybody understood was ridiculous, and he was able to explain it in very simple language. I don't know what happened.
He says, I don't know what happened in the next 8 years. Is that what he says? From 2016 to 2024? Does he say 8 years?
In the next 18 years.
18 years.
Our party became the party of war again.
That's what he's talking about. They hate Obama. They hate him. They hate him.
And I'm just trying to say that if we're about our principles, let's be about a maniac who doesn't have the basic cognitive capacity that is deserving of the job. And at the same time, it's not enough to just point to him and be like, oh, well, he sucks. Clearly he sucks. So why are you better? You got to be fighting for something, not just against something.
Well, and when we talk about like this war on Hassan Piker, this war on you, this war on Zoran Mamdani, which, by the way, it's very interesting that the people, these sort of centrist mainstream corporate Democrats pick the biggest.
The war on I'm sorry. And I could be wrong. Maybe I'm just not watching the right media. But I feel like the war on Mamdani is all fucking Republicans. Are there still like center left lib outlets that are attacking Mamdani a lot? Maybe I'm just not seeing it. Everything that comes across my feed, I feel like it's all fucking Republicans that fucking hate him. They fucking hate Mamdani. I don't see lib left attacking him, but again, I don't know. During the primary, sure, but after that.
Zoran Mamdani, which, by the way, it's very interesting that the people these sort of centrist mainstream corporate Democrats pick the biggest fights with all happen to be Muslim, but I digress. That war is being...
Also, this dude, you're so fucking white and retarded. Oh my God, and both so American. Both of these people are so fucking white, but...
This war on you, this war on Zoran Mamdani, which, by the way, it's very interesting that the people these sort of centrist mainstream corporate Democrats pick the biggest fights with all happen to be Muslim.
It's so crazy that, like, Republicans are trying to be fucking actually Islamophobic, and they try to claim that Mamdani is, like, this Islamist jihadist, which is a joke, but then these people on the far left try to claim that lib left is attacking Mamdani all the time, like, in an Islamic... Or Islamophobic way. It's like, what the fuck are we doing here? It's so cringe. Holy shit.
Who on the left is attacking Mamdani right
after
now?
After the election? I don't know. I don't see it. If it's happening, I'm just not seeing it. So I don't know.
But I digress. That war is being waged oftentimes not by Republicans, not by the right. Of course, they're always going to, you know, bitch and moan about everything that we do over here. But it is coming from the people that should be our bedfellows. So on the same day, Israel passed an ethnically segregated death penalty last week, 2 weeks ago, that only applies to Palestinians in what's been called the very definition of apartheid. CNN's Jake Tapper, who I will the never definition. Shut up about, hosted an 8-minute segment litigating the ethics of welcoming Hassan Piker into the Democratic Party. Now, I know that...
Why the fuck was Jake Tapper and them talking about the United States domestic politics when we could be talking about Israel, Palestine, when we could be debating laws that are being proposed in the Knesset in Israel, Palestine.
8 minutes doesn't sound like much for listeners of this podcast, where brevity is never my strength. But when you're doing an hour-long national news show amidst a war, it's a pretty shocking amount.
Amidst a war? You mean a genocide, right?
A genocide?
Of time to devote to a Twitch streamer. Jake hosted Jonah Platt, the less famous and talented son of multimillionaire.
Also, can't talk about anything, by the way.
Yeah, does this guy ever talk about the Republicans, or is it literally just all Dem bashing? This entire fucking video has been Dem bashing, except for when Al Sayed did lip service to, like, oh yeah, guys, we gotta hate Trump, he's terrible, and then that's it.
Time to devote to a Twitch streamer. Jake hosted Jonah Platt, the less famous and talented son of multimillionaire producer Mark Platt, known best for his ongoing campaign against Miss Rachel.
I pulled all 683 of Miss Rachel's Instagram posts from October 7th, 2023 through March 16th, 2026. And what those posts reveal is a story not fit for children. Wanting kids to live isn't anti-Semitic. If you're already on Team Rachel or just not paying attention, you might not see anything wrong with that sentence. And perhaps her most explicitly implicit post, she describes, quote, good people as those who want kids not to be killed or lose limbs.
Jonah smeared Hassan as anti-Semitic, which of course is what Jake Tapper invited him to do.
what Piker does that a lot of people of his ilk do, these are the tropes they use, and then he'll use the exact same tropes and just sub Jew for Israel.
Yep.
He would never say Jews control the media, but
True.
Israel controls the media.
True.
And, you know, the Jews didn't pull us into the war with Iran and control the American government, but Israel does.
Is it? Matt's about to listen to all this. Well, I mean, isn't he right?
Normal for the media apparatus of the Democratic establishment to be fighting this hard against someone, Hassan Piker, who represents a huge portion of their potential voters?
Yeah, right.
I mean, it leaves me wondering, truly, like, if these people want to win.
I'll tell you this. If I've got to choose between being on the side of Jonah Platt or Ms. Rachel, I'm picking Ms. Rachel. And I think most people...
I wonder if this guy knew he was coming here for an hour-long Hassan Glaze Fest.
Hell yeah.
If you're trying to fight against, like, a woman who's universally beloved by children under three who haven't been taught that some people are worthy of hating and others are not, then at the end of the day, you're probably on the wrong side of history. And I'm going to be on Ms. Rachel's side of history forever.
Oh, yeah.
I've known Jake for a long time. We worked together at CNN. I think Jake knows better, but you have to ask yourself two big questions. Why the ideological push? And then what is it about the money and the movement of money? You know, folks like CNN, right, the entire media apparatus, they're losing their hold on the public conversation. And people like Hassan Piker are an existential threat to their business model.
Mm-hmm.
Because for a long time, you had, what, four or five options to get your news. And the people they platformed were the people who were going to be heard, and the people they shunned were the people they weren't. And then you have creators like you, like Hassan, like Joe Rogan, right, who are creating platforms where other alternative views can be heard. Some of them great, some of them awful. But as a business model, it means that eyeballs and eardrums are moving away from the likes of a CNN and moving toward the likes of a Matt Bernstein and a Hassan Piker. And they see that as existential. But the problem is, rather than adjust and start to create a more open perspective and a more open dialogue, you've watched as corporate media has just chosen to double down. Why? Well, think about where the money goes to corporate media. They monetize eyeballs and eardrums by running ads for big pharma to sell you stuff. Like, that's how the business model works. So you just kind of have to follow the money. And I'm an anti-corporatist. I have been for a very long time, right? I believe that small business is the keystone of our economy.
It's not, by the way, and never has been, but that's okay. What is this? This Jonah Platt guy has 40,000 subs. Why are they even talking about this guy?
Because he's on the interview.
True.
What's his name?
True. Jake Tapper.
I fight against big corporations, and everybody kind of knows that. So for them, it's just a matter of where the money is. And too often in these kinds of newsrooms, there is a party line that gets towed. And too often it's been the same old people with the same old perspectives who've assumed that they have a hold on our eardrums, that they can decide who we hear and who we don't. And then they double down, bring on people like Jonah Platt, whose whole thing is to smear people like Ms. Rachel. So at the end of the day, unfortunately, I don't think they really want to win. I think they want to make money.
Mm.
And I think by trying to point to
these kinds of... Ms. Rachel's smearing was stupid, I think.
Was it? I don't actually know what her position was on anything.
She did a few retarded.
I feel like she was doing some kind of cringe
on Instagram,
pro pally shit. Yeah, but then I feel like people got mega ass pained about it.
But it wasn't like the biggest deal in the world. I don't know.
Sure.
Whatever.
Kinds of new media creators and talk about why somehow they're not worthy of being listened to, whatever they think. This is about trying to hold on to the money making machine that they've had for a very long time, and clearly it's not working because more people are listening to folks like you to get a different perspective.
True.
And they're understanding that at the end of the day, you can take whatever you want out of context for a guy who's been streaming 8 hours a day every day for 13 years. But there are enough people who are paying attention to be like, you took this out of context, and all that shows is that your whole approach here is indicting of the fact that your smear campaigns should not be working and are not consistent with the truth, which forces us to ask whether or not any of the stuff that you produce is actually worthy of the truth.
And you know what? When it comes to those like Hassan Piker comments that, you know, are taken out of context and, you know, they love to make a big stink about, like, we need to condemn Hassan Piker because Hassan Piker said that America deserved 9/11.
And here's what Piker said about the horrors of September 11th, 2001.
Hassan Piker's past and present is checkered with controversial, if not outrageous, if not bigoted state comments like this one.
America deserved 9/11, dude. F*** it. I'm saying it. Nope. We totally put it on ourselves, dude. Holy shit.
It's important to speak to what he said about 9/11 and October the 7th.
Democrats say he's a dangerous anti-Semite. He's also declared America, quote, deserved 9/11.
I mean, it's crazy. I mean, my God, you have many of my parties. They're proud to do events with like that Hassan Piker. Now, this is the individual that just recently said that America deserved 9/11.
Piker did later call that comment inappropriate and said he didn't mean Americans deserved to die.
Any principled anti-Zionist?
Why are we?
Any person who is principled in, like, we need to tax billionaires to fund social services knows that their issue with Hassan Piker is not that he said one time in one of his eight-hour streams, which he's done every day for years and years and years.
Out of context, out of context.
9/11. It's not about that. It's not about that. Look who we have in office right now across the political spectrum. People who have done heinous things. Not just said heinous things. People who have done heinous things. To women. To children. And yet there's so much more of a commotion about this one throwaway comment that Hassan Piker made.
Throwaway. One thing.
And so it's not about that. It is about the fact that he is anti-billionaire and anti-Israel. And I wish, you know, I wish we could just be more honest about what we're actually attacking here. Again, after...
Me too, brother. Me too. I wish.
Having just done this with the Zoran Mamdani campaign, where I had to explain to, like, you know, for example, like my normie family, who's not in like the media every day, like this consuming politics all the time, where they just kind of get the vague contours of like, wait, is Zoran Mamdani anti-Semitic? I heard that. And then you have to explain, well, no, this is actually just about crushing the left.
You know, when you've lost the argument, you make character assassinations.
Right.
And so I know we've already won the argument. You know, the statistics show it.
And so instead, it's they reach for these easy to pick up character assassinations. You know, my Republican opponent, Mike Rogers, here's a guy who spent his time in Congress literally.
Oh, my God. Are we talking a Republican right now? What?
You know, the statistics show it. And so instead, it's they reach for these easy to pick up character assassinations. You know, my Republican opponent, Mike Rogers.
Is it? Would you say that my Republican opponent right now, considering he hasn't won the primary yet? I don't know. Maybe.
Here's a guy who spent his time in Congress literally kicking off.
Oh, was this for the past election? That he, for whatever seat he held, maybe? Okay.
I think he's talking in the state one that he worked in or whatever.
Gotcha.
I'm entering him.
The opioid epidemic. And then he retired from Congress to a $14 million payout to be a lobbyist for the pharmaceutical industry. And his whole thing is, well, Abdul's campaigning with Hasan Piker. I'm like, bro, like you're trying to beat me on guilt by association.
Wait, are you sure?
You begged, right? You essentially would have given up one of your testicles for an endorsement from Donald Trump. Yeah. A guy who talked about grabbing people by their nether regions. Wow. And you're talking to me about who I'm campaigning with after you kicked off an epidemic that killed millions of people? I'm so sorry, but like, that's not an argument. And you're going to lose. And you're going to lose because you look like a washed up used car salesman who sold people opioids, took a $14 million payout, literally made money on an epidemic that has ended up killing millions of people.
Right. And you want to comment on morality?
Yeah. When you lose the argument, right, you go for character assassination. They've lost the argument. So we're going to keep making our argument because it's the winning argument. At the end of the day, nobody wants to live in an America where corporations get to dictate your future, get to offshore automate your job.
Again, I know people have their opinions. Even IRI saying that the Ken Martin PodSafe interview, Ken Martin could have done better. Maybe he could have. But like, there is no world where Mallory McMorrow could have had a performance that would have rivaled this when the interviewer is just like playing, you know, like testicle tennis with this guy. Like, it's just insane to me that you're going to bring this guy on. You're pretending. I keep saying that. I don't know if they actually pretend to be impartial. Maybe they're just openly like, Hasan dick sucks, a socialist dick sucks. But like, I don't even know if this guy's answered a single fucking policy question yet. Has he? I feel like it's all just been like, what are the vibes? Hasan, how do you feel about, you know, I guess this guy you run against, Hasan? And then like, doesn't the Democratic establishment kind of suck? Hasan. It's like, what are we even doing here? Like, how, like this guy, it would be impossible for him to give a bad interview on this program when the whole thing is just designed to make him look good. And Hasan.
Everything's a layup. Yeah. I mean, yeah.
There's anything about it because they bought off the politicians who are supposed to do something about it. Nobody wants to live in America where you've got corporations who get to raise the prices on the pharmaceuticals you need to survive. We don't want to live in the kind of circumstance where we cannot see a doctor when we get sick. I want to live in an America where everybody is guaranteed the healthcare they need and deserve, where you can dream of owning a home, where you send your kid to a dignified school. Like, these are not hard things. So we're going to keep making that argument. They can keep trying to argue about what a Twitch streamer said out of context. And I'm looking forward to winning that argument every single day, because you know what? That means that we have the opportunity to win a future. Like I told you, I'm not here to defend myself at the end of the day. I really am not. I am here to make sure that our public policy finally works for the 10 million good people here in the state of Michigan who deserve a lot better than they've been getting by the likes of a Mike Rogers, by the likes of an establishment that tells them that the best way forward is to siphon off yet more and more of their hard-earned money into taxes that go to fight foreign wars, or worse, go and line the pockets of an insurance CEO.
It's something that I find particularly infuriating, frankly, is that we have listened for the last several years as Democrats and their consultants and mouthpieces in liberal media have spoken about the need for a bigger tent. We keep hearing this, big tent. That is to say, welcome more people with differing views into the party for the sake of accruing more voting power. Kamala Harris in 2024 famously campaigned.
They bring it up even.
Republican war hawk Liz Cheney.
You know, this is, I think, one of the reasons why in this election, I actually have the endorsement of 200 Republicans who have formerly worked with President Bush, Mitt Romney, and John McCain, including the endorsement of former Vice President Dick Cheney and Congress member Liz Cheney.
And promised to put a Republican on her cabinet if she won, which she didn't.
Will you appoint a Republican to your cabinet?
Yes, I would.
Which also at the time had me wondering, like, okay, well, who do I vote for if I don't want any Republicans?
Not Mamdani. You didn't Mamdani keep the, it was the police chief, right? Who was really controversial, that a lot of the lefty people were like, get rid of that guy, get rid of him. And Mamdani was like, you know what? No, I'm going to keep him.
No.
I don't know if he's a Republican or not, but I know that was considered controversial. So I guess this guy hates Mamdani too. Probably because he's Islamophobic, just saying, or racist, actually.
In the cabinet, but I digress. Tom Suozzi of New York said we need to make space in the party for people who are anti-trans. Liberal columnist Ezra Klein advocated for anti-choice Democrats, anti-abortion Democrats. So these Democrats are very happy to entertain positions to the right of their own. But when it comes to widening the tent left, we're immediately shut down. We are smeared. We are counted out. Many on the left, like, I just want to speak for...
Just so you know, when people are widening their tent, they almost always mean becoming more moderate. Nobody's like, we need to invite more people into the party by going to the extremes. Nobody in the history of like all of politics has ever meant that. It's always generally like we're probably losing the base a bit. Like,
you know, those ISIS guys.
Yeah.
They could join the tent, I guess.
Cringe. Wait, did you catch who they were quoting? Wait, what? Hold on.
Former Vice President Dick Cheney and Congress member Liz Cheney.
And promised to put a Republican on her cabinet if she won, which she didn't.
Will you appoint a Republican to your cabinet?
Yes, I would.
Which also at the time had me wondering, like, okay, well, who do I vote for if I don't want any Republicans in the cabinet? But
Obama did this, by the way.
Oh, but they hate Obama. They do. A lot of people don't realize it, but they do. They're really undercover about that. Oh, this was the, or this is the New York City Police Commissioner for
Jessica Tisch.
Really? That's how you pronounce that last name? You sure?
I digress.
10KEOY26, thank you for gifting 20 subs in DGG. Hello, everybody.
Tom Suozzi of New York said we need to make space in the party for people who are anti-trans. Liberal columnist Ezra Klein advocated for anti-choice Democrats, anti-abortion Democrats. So these Democrats are very happy to entertain positions to the right of their own. But when it comes to widening the tent left, we're immediately shut down.
Because that's what we lost voters on, was on being too far left on some issues.
Are smeared. We are counted out. Many on the
read the quote and what they mean by anti-trans. No, it's probably just going to be somebody saying, like, maybe we don't need trans athletes with cis athletes, and they're calling that anti-trans. 99% of this is what they're talking about.
Left, and like, I just want to speak for like many of my own listeners of this show, feel like nobody even wants their vote.
There's a couple things. Number one, you know, all the folks that you mentioned spend way too much time talking to Washington, D.C. insiders. Hmm. What D.C. does is they pull out their telescope and they look through it, like, oh, those people over there that we never actually stepped foot into their state, here's how they think. Hmm. And I'm like, I'm sorry, but stop stereotyping the incredibly diverse, incredibly thoughtful people of my state, because I've been to 90 different cities now. I've done 300 public events. And even people who would call themselves independent, they don't sit in the middle of a left-right spectrum. Instead, they've got a diversity of different opinions about different issues. And the thing that they look for more than anything else is not where you sit on a made-up left-right spectrum that makes it easy for people in Washington, D.C. to try and shorthand.
But are you a populist or not?
And our politics. Yes, instead, they're asking, are you real? Are you really about the things that you say you're about, even if I disagree with you? Mm-hmm. I had a gentleman come up to me, and he argued that I didn't believe in the Second Amendment, despite the fact that I do. I just have read the Second Amendment. And the Second Amendment is about protecting yourself from the government.
What?
I mean, and he argued that I didn't believe in the Second Amendment, despite the fact that I do. I just have read the Second Amendment. And the Second Amendment is about protecting yourself from the government. And at the end of the day, you know, this notion of any gun for anyone, anytime, anywhere is not what the Second Amendment says. And he and I, in the middle of a town hall, had an argument about it. And he comes up to me afterwards with a $100 check. And he says, hey, I'm voting for you.
Hey.
I was like, I'm sorry, what? He's like, I'm voting for you. I was like, you and I clearly disagree. He's like, no, we disagree on one issue. But if you're willing to tell me where you stand, you're willing to argue with me. You're not telling me what you think I want to hear, but you're telling me where you stand. That means that in those rooms in D.C., when they push you, you're not going to get pushed around because you believe in things, and that's why you're doing it. And that's the part that D.C. never sees. So when we talk about what wins, let's think about authenticity. Because Wow. Say what you will about Donald Trump, the man's authentic self is like a superego that exists in a body. Yeah. And so whenever he speaks, it looks like he's being authentic to what he believes, because nobody in their right mind would ever say the shit that he says. And if perfectly inoffensive was what won elections, then why the hell did Donald Trump get elected twice? So how...
Well, why did he lose the second time? They always forget that. They never mention that part, but whatever.
We just say what we believe. And the thing about it is, I'm not new to this. I ran back in 2018. I had a lovely old lady at church come up to me after a Sunday sermon. She said, you know, you keep saying the same things. I was like, ma'am, I thought that was a good thing. She's like, no, you keep saying the same stuff. You got to come up with some new material. I was like, look, when we have some new problems, I'll talk about new problems. And there are some new problems. I'll talk about AI. That was not a thing when I ran last time. But at least you know where I stand. Because when we ran in 2018, I was the only Democrat not taking corporate money then, still not taking it now. I was talking about Medicare for All then. I'm talking about Medicare for All now. I was talking about what it looks like to build an economy for small businesses then. And I'll be talking about it now. I'll be talking about it in the future. You know where I stand. And my job is just to show you who I am. And if you like who I am and you like what I stand for and you think it would actually make your life better,
he really just goes for all the fucking populist issues, huh?
That's what they're he is a sloppiest, yeah.
But at the end of the day, at least you know where I stand, and I stand on principle, 10 toes down. I'm not getting pushed around by some big corporation or some super PAC trying to tell me that the most important thing that we can do in the United States is support Israel. I don't get pushed around. We don't back down. And I think people are looking for that. And that's what DC seems to be missing.
Yeah. How dare you have principles? You people disgust me. Much of the anti-Hassan Piker campaign is the product of Third Way, which people on this podcast might not be familiar with, but it's a
Zionist.
Billionaire-funded centrist think tank that's very open about its mission to crush the progressive wing of the Democratic Party. Third Way opposes abolishing ICE, which 77% of Democrats support, Democratic voters, that is. They oppose Medicare for All, which 77% of Democratic voters support. Good on the 77%, guys. So, in theory, it shouldn't matter.
That is not even remotely true, but okay.
Third Way thinks, except that Third Way has something the rest of us don't. Money. Third Way, whose co-founder Matt Bennett has also compared Hassan Piker to Nick Fuentes, plans to spend $30 to $50 million on crushing the left flank of the party leading up to 2028, ensuring that only quote-unquote moderates can survive. Because that works so well for...
True. True. Moderates, a.k.a.
leading up to 2028. Ensuring that only quote-unquote moderates can survive. Because that works so well for Kamala Harris, and for Joe, and for Hillary. One more time, boys, don't give up yet. But Abdul, the vast majority of Democratic voters support policies like abolishing ICE, like funding for Israel's genocide.
No shot. This is AI. 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 This has to be AI. Warning, this must be an AI clip.
Here's the other thing with Hassan. He's unreasonably good looking and like...
We've watched this. I'm sorry. We watched this. I thought this was with El Sayed. We've seen this.
Oh, and dresses cool.
Tell me about it.
But do you know what I mean? Like he Hassan would be an influencer no matter what he was saying, because he is
hot.
Here's the other thing with Hassan. He's
Jesus Christ.
Problem, Trollface?
Aside, like taxing billionaires. And it increasingly feels like our leaders in power don't care what we want. They are willing to smear representatives of the majority, like Hassan Piker, in order to preserve the status quo for billionaires, corporations, AIPAC, the list goes on. And so, like, this feeling that I've been stuck with, it just doesn't feel like a representative democracy, where these broadly popular positions and people who hold them are like, who do we vote for if we want our views reflected?
We have to understand what Third Way and AIPAC really are. These are democracy suppression machines.
True.
Their job is to funnel huge amounts of money from the richest people in society to insulate politicians who agree with them from the likes of the public who does not agree with them. Third Way exists to launder old ideas that have destroyed people's lives back into our politics yet again, using the money of the corporations who benefit from those old ideas. AIPAC, same thing. MAGA billionaire dollars funneling into our politics. They don't run ads about Israel. They don't just come out and say it. They run ads about any which thing, trying to smear anybody who is not sufficiently allegiant to the state of Israel and what the state of Israel leadership wants. Mm-hmm. And so we just got to call it what it is. And we've got to recognize that they are beatable, because at the end of the day, money doesn't vote. People vote. And so we've got to be willing to put ourselves where they put their money, right? And that means we sign up to volunteer. That means we're knocking doors. That means we're having uncomfortable conversations with folks about who we are and who we want to be. It's that people power that actually does win elections. And yes, right, I would rather be in a situation where I'm taking $5 from 100,000 people than taking $100,000 from five people. And they think that system of politics works. I think it's quite the opposite. So if you want to be able to beat them, help us beat them, right? Let me go after them. I'll take all of their shots. But at the end of the day, my job is not to protect me. My job is to make sure that yet another generation doesn't get broken over the policies that they're trying to force down our throats. Policies that tell us that the whims and interests of big corporations and their shareholders matter more than the lives we get to lead. Policies that tell us that corporations should own your home instead of you being able to own a home. Mm-hmm. Corporations telling us that the $18 million earned by an insurance CEO was earned justifiably, and that we cannot ever imagine healthcare without those big corporate insurance companies. If you oppose those things, help us lead that forward. Be a part of campaigns like mine, campaigns across the country that are stepping up, stepping out, taking them on, and beating them.
Politico asked 14 potential 2028 Democratic presidential candidates if they would appear on Hassan Piker's live stream. Again, very funny that this is becoming a litmus test. He is a Twitch streamer. Only three said that they would. Among those who said they would not appear alongside Hassan were Cory Booker. Do you know who Cory Booker has appeared alongside multiple times?
Who?
Benjamin Netanyahu.
Oh! Not good.
Yeah. Yeah, that part. You won't even say he's a war criminal. How many people you got to kill? How many kids you got to kill to be called a war criminal? You know, I guess millions of dollars, AIPAC dollars buys your voice box.
And another who refused to appear alongside Hassan was Alyssa Slotkin, who is a senator who's voted multiple times to send
money to Israel.
Billions of dollars to aid Israel's genocide. And then Alyssa Slotkin just last week did happily go on Bill Maher's show. Bill Maher, who has called Islam, quote, the motherlode of bad ideas, who is currently cheering on Donald Trump's illegal war in Iran, saying that he knows he should be against it, but he isn't. He said his bigotry towards Muslims can't be racist because people of all races can be Muslim. The list goes on.
True.
And none of this seems to bother Alyssa Slotkin, I guess, as much as Hassan Piker being against the genocide of Palestinians.
Why do they all as a Muslim, feel so fucking entitled that Hassan has to talk to these people and these people have to talk to him? It's like retarded.
It's kind of like a fake it till you make it. The way that these people work is that they constantly try to sell this idea that the majority of Americans, not even Democrats, but the majority of Americans all believe in their policy agenda, that they all agree with their big policy positions. They just are either being suppressed by big money, big corporations, big pharma, lobbyists. They just haven't gotten their message out yet because the media is against them. There's always like some reason or excuse why they never have to change their policy platform, and they can just keep pushing the same sloppyism over and over and over again. And really, every American agrees. They just need to, I guess, like, be exposed to it.
Man, I'd imagine you have feelings about the unique pass that so much of this country, including this wing of the Democratic Party, makes for Islamophobia.
I do. And at the end of the day, my job here is not to defend myself. You know, my job here is to defend the good people in Michigan who've had a bum deal. Mm-hmm. You know, I know what I'm in for. I know that I pray the wrong way for a lot of people. I've got the wrong skin color. My family comes from the wrong place. Mm-hmm. I got the wrong name. And at the end of the day, I have watched a lot of people suffer a lot worse. You know, I've been really privileged and blessed in my life. So, you know, I don't begrudge politicians for going anywhere and talking to anybody, but I do begrudge a double standard that says you can talk to some folks, but not others. Yeah. So look, Bill Maher wants to have me on a show. I'll go on a show, right? I'll prove to him what it looks like to get completely owned by a Muslim guy.
Yeah.
So I'm happy to go everywhere and talk to everyone. I've been consistent about that, but please don't play this platform game where you platform police or you engage in this cancel culture and then pretend that you're not, right? Because at the end of the day, if you are somebody who wants to go everywhere, you want to carry your positions and have conversations.
People are saying Matt is wrong about the motherlode comment being said by Bill Maher. It was Sam Harris that said that. Oh, well, there you go.
The folks you think you can persuade, great. That's what good politics is about. That's exactly what I'm doing, which is why I would appear with Hassan Piker. I would go on Fox and Friends. I'd sit down with Joe Rogan, and I'd go on Bill Maher despite the terrible things he said about people who pray like I do. Mm-hmm. But don't then tell me what you can do or you can't do and try to have it both ways.
Yeah. Before we go, Abdul, I'd be remiss to ignore a growing elephant in the room, which is that I keep getting messages from people who listen to my show wondering why they're agreeing with people like Tucker Carlson, Candace Owens, Marjorie Taylor Greene, when those people forcefully and unequivocally call for the end of foreign wars and genocides, for our tax dollars to fund schools and not bombs. And, you know, I always try to explain to those people that those pundits aren't coming from an ethic of equality, that they're still Christian nationalists, that much of their criticism of Israel is folded into anti-Semitic worldviews. And yet, when groups like AIPAC and Third Way and liberal mainstream media outlets crush any criticism of Israel within the Democratic Party, the way that we've seen them do to Hassan and you by proxy, it feels like the party has allowed itself to be completely outflanked on this issue. And frankly, it's embarrassing. Like, I don't want to see my friends retweeting Tucker Carlson. This brings me no joy. So how do you see Democrats like actually becoming leaders on these issues again? Basic human morality.
Go back to your principles. Go back to your principles. And I think your point is really important, that just because they got to a conclusion that you agree with doesn't necessarily mean they got there the right way or agree with your principles. You know, what you should be looking for is somebody who clearly states their principles and then applies their principles everywhere. The mistake too many Democrats make is that they state their principles and then their conclusions don't actually align with their principles. And then you've got folks like the others you mentioned whose outcomes seem consistent, but the principles are off. You want alignment between what you say you believe and then what that means, regardless of the circumstance that you're applying it to. That is the kind of clarity that we all need. And I'm calling on Democrats to stop bending to the winds of the likes of an AIPAC or a corporate PAC when they tell you what you can and cannot believe, but instead state your principles and then follow those principles where they lead. Have the courage of your convictions to apply them openly and honestly. And what you'll find is that people will respect that. I think too many people want to be liked. Don't try to be liked. Mm-hmm. You know, your job at the end of the day is to be respected for what you believe, right? And at the end of the day, there are going to be some people who disagree with you, and that's okay. And I will just tell folks, like, you know, we play this game where there's like good and evil. And like, at the end of the day, like, there are going to be things you agree with people you deeply disagree with. And there are going to be things you disagree with people you generally agree with. Mm-hmm. Like, that's just human nature, right? All of us have had parents and we have significant others and we have, you know, siblings and we have children. And generally you agree with those people on a lot of things. And then every once in a while they come with an opinion. You're like, wait, what? How does that apply? So I just think we've got to stop being so precious about this sorting that social media and our system of politics tries to force us into. And I'm asking people to keep an open mind and to hold.
Is this the maybe not a physician guy? This is the definitely lied tons and tons about being a doctor guy, but that's okay. We don't care.
A very clear standard. Ask people what their principles are and then make sure that they apply their principles linearly in every situation. That's what I try to do in my politics and where I'm inconsistent. Call me out. You know, let's have a conversation about it. Let me explain to you why I believe what I believe. But hold me accountable to that. What are my principles and how do they apply?
Abdul Al-Sayed, thank you for your time. I usually ask.
Did he get a single hard question? No,
these are friendly conversations. Same team conversations even. That's it. That's what this was.
Where to support their work? Where should they support your Patreon? But in this case, you're running for the U.S. Senate. So where can people...
It's so funny that as much as this guy apparently cares about Israel-Palestine, he even asked this guy, what is your solution to Israel-Palestine? He didn't even ask him. He didn't even put the question to him.
Support your campaign.
AbdulForSenate.com. If you haven't signed up to volunteer, please do. If you can chip us off $5, $10, it goes a long way. I'm the only candidate in my race who's never taken a dime of corporate money. AIPAC has called me the most dangerous opponent to the U.S.-Israel relationship.
Hell yeah.
I wish they made a t-shirt. I'd wear it with pride. So I hope that folks will support us. And follow us on social media. Share our stuff. Tell your friends. Have conversations if you're in Michigan. Have those conversations with your friends and loved ones, with your parents.
It should tell you something that they did a 40-minute interview also without really detailing a single fucking policy.
About why it is that you support us and what we can do to win. We've got 4 months left in this race for the primary and then another 3 months after that. And then from there, 6 years to try and make some change. The end of the day, it's not just about winning U.S. Senate seat, right? People talk about electability. But then the question for me is, elected to do what? So make sure you know what the folks who will hold that seat are going to do with that seat. It's not enough to just have a color or a letter. It's about what you're fighting for. And my hope is that I can go and use that seat every single day to advance an America where corporations no longer dictate our future, where we're putting money back in pockets and we're passing Medicare for all.
And thank you, dear listener, for tuning in for this episode, a mini-sode, a first.
What's his PhD in? I think it was in epidemiology.
First on
right?
Fruity, I know if you come here every other week for my 2-hour long deep dive episodes, you probably didn't expect to hear from me on an off week, but can't shut me up that easily. These smear campaigns move fast, and sometimes we just gotta move on them here at A Bit Fruity HQ. In all seriousness, it is a real joy to, at this point, be
Were
able
there any
to
hard
leverage
questions
this.
Asked in this interview?
No, of course not. Why are you even asking that? Okay. Fucking
platform, not only to
so just for
speak
McMorrow.
Truth to
yes.
power as I see it, but also to help out the campaigns of future leaders that I and hopefully you really believe in. So. Thank you so much to Dr. Abdul Al-Sayed for joining me on this episode today. Thank you for taking the time to tune in. If you would like more of the show, there is a brand new bonus episode on Israel's Princess of Propaganda, Noa Tishbe.
Bro.
That's awesome.
Up now on Patreon. That will be linked in the episode description. Noa Tishbe is... A truly fascinating, if exhausting, figure. Matt Lieb of the Bad Hasbara podcast and myself take a really good look at her for about 2 hours. So if you'd like to tune in, you can catch us on Patreon. Otherwise, I will catch you next week. And until then, stay fruity. Her height. My grandma, who I am so close with and love, called me. My grandma, who was born in the 1930s, you know, she called me and she was like, I don't remember it ever being like this for Jews in this country. And I really felt like upset because I very gently was like, basically like, it's fine. I mean, it's not entirely fine, not for the reasons Jonathan Greenblatt thinks, but right. Like, we're okay. Like, you can go outside. Like, someone isn't going to be standing there with a swastika poster. This Jonathan Greenblatt tweet where he's like, it's a...
This was 6 months ago. When were the two Jewish people just murdered coming out of the embassy or whatever? Or some museum or whatever? What am I thinking of?
That was like 3 or 4 months ago, I'd say.
No way. It was a little longer than that, no? I feel like it was like a year ago or something.
5-alarm fire and Jews are fleeing. It really reminds me of this one tweet from Meghan McCain. So in 2020, following protests in response to the murder of George Floyd, Meghan McCain tweeted.
My neighborhood in Manhattan is eviscerated and looks like a war zone. De Blasio and Cuomo are in utter disgrace. This is not America. Our leaders have abandoned us and continue to let great American cities burn to the ground and be destroyed. I could never have fathomed this.
And then her neighbor, who lives in her building, a TV executive named Kristen Bartlett, tweeted,
Megan, we live in the same building, and I just walked outside. It's fine. Perfect. Also, I just want to, like,
Yes, that's the two complaints are definitely the same. It's a fucking Meghan McCain.
Remember to hit that like and subscribe, and don't forget the notification bell so that my videos show up right in your feed.